Rishis Baralukim, that's Shemai Vesar, it's good. So the Kliyakar says that, why does the Torah begin with the letter B's? So he says it's a throwback to Koheles. And Koheles, Shlomo HaMelech compares the Torah to the sun that goes over three sides, like the three sides of the world, like the image of a bee, which is open on, which is closed on three sides and open on one side. He says it's open on the north. He says the Torah was given through Moshe, whose face resembles the sun, like Ramban Basra, like Pnei Moshe Kipnei Chama. And he says maybe the reason why the Yetzer Hara is opposed to the Torah is because the pasuk in Yirmiyahu describes Yetzer Hara as coming from the north. Ramit Safon Tipatach Hara is the description of the Yetzer Hara, and it breaches the fence of Torah. And it, right, the pasuk says in Sefer Yoav as Hatzfoni Archik Me'Alechem, which is also a description of the Yetzer Hara. The Yetzer is always referred to as the north. It's Sfoni. And also the gold, which is Taiva and Olamazel, also comes from the north. It's also associated with that as well. And those two things, the Yetzer Hara and physicality and Chomer, are obviously Keneged ideals of Torah. And that's why the opening letter in the Torah is telling you, opt for things that don't represent Taiva, that don't represent, you know, the Yetzer Hara. Then we know, of course, the Torah should have began with the word Elokim. The Gemara Megillah points out that with the whole story with Talmei HaMelech, with the Septuagint, they in fact translated with the word Elokim. Tosfos there has a right, everyone knows the famous word from Rashi in there. Rashi Megillah says that really they wrote Elokim Bar Bereish. That's what the Gemara says. Because I would have said that Bereish is the name of a god. So Tosfos there has a Kashi. He says, what do you mean? He says they're translating into Greek. Why don't they just write in the beginning of God's creating? So Tosfos claims that you never have a religious document that doesn't begin with the name with God as the first word in a document. So the obvious question is, yeah, but our Torah doesn't begin with the word God. It begins with the word Bereishis. And the further question is, he says that even if you can come up with a reason why that should be, why is Hashem's name the third name? It should have been at least B'tchilas or whatever. Bara Elokim, however you would have formulated it. So he says like this. The Kliyakar says that you can't just jump in and understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You can't understand Hashem like that. He says that people try to prove the existence of Hashem. They try to prove all sorts of different theological axioms and all sorts of different kinds of things like that. So he says, Bereishis Bara. In other words, you have to accept as a basis, as a fact that the world is created, and then you can start to figuring out what's the nature of God. You know, how does it work? How does He exist? How does the world function? Etc. Another question is, it should have said Bara Elokim Bereishis. It's going to want to put forth of din as early as possible, because the existence of Hashem, as we'll see obviously, which is, you know, Pashut, doesn't depend on things that came earlier on in creation. Hashem, as we assume, is the Kadmon. He's the original thing, and everything else in the world was created after Hashem's existence. The Kliyakar quotes a Gemara in Chulin that says that the Malachim, when they sing Shira, they only mention Hashem's name after three words: Kadosh, 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 Hashem. When we praise Hashem, so we mention Hashem after two words, Shema Yisrael Hashem. So the Gemara says, what's pshat? What does that mean? Why do we mention Hashem's name before the Malachim do? So the Kliyakar says the idea that the Malachim, he says, in theory, we want to come to understand Hashem, you have to go through three different levels or three different worlds, really, of understanding. There's the Olam HaTachton, the Olam HaEmtzai, and the Olam HaElyon. And he says the symbolism of that is based on the ladder from Yaakov's dream. So he says the lower rungs of the ladder represent the Olam HaTachton, and he says you have the middle rungs are the Olam HaEmtzai, he says Rosho Magia HaShemayim is the Olam HaEmtzai, and then Vihine Malachi Elokim Olivior Dimbo is the Olam HaElyon. What does the Pasuk say right after that? Vihine Hashem Yitzav Alav. So when you work in the progressions of understanding the Olam HaTachton, the Olam HaEmtzai, and the Olam HaElyon, then you could understand Vihine Hashem Yitzav Alav. Hashem is above all of those. So when you understand how those three worlds, you know, work together and how they operate, then you can come to an understanding of HaKadosh Baruch Hu beyond that. Once you understand those three worlds, you'll come to understand what Hashem is all about. However, the Kliyakar says most people cannot attain such a lofty, high level of comprehension. It's very, very difficult. He says, why? Because people were steeped in the physical world. So it's very difficult for us to separate, you know, the physical and the spiritual and to come to that sort of a level. So he says, what do we do? So therefore, he says, that's why we mention HaKadosh Baruch Hu after only two words. Meaning what? We accepted based on Mesorah, on Kabbalah, on tradition, that this is what it is. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, end of the story. Malachim, they can't just be like, oh, we're just going to accept it on blind faith. They actually have to intellectually grasp what it means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu rules over the worlds. So they have to go through Kadosh, 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 three worlds in terms of comprehension and intellectual, thinking about it before they can actually come to the conclusion that, oh, HaKadosh Baruch Hu rules over the world. We just accept it on blind faith. So in a sense, we're less holy or we're less intellectually capable, but we say Hashem's name earlier than the Malachim do almost by default, because we just accept it on almost blind faith because we don't understand it. As opposed to the Malachim, where they have to actually understand what it is that they're looking at. And the Kliyakar relates this to an idea which we'll discuss later about how HaKadosh Baruch Hu initially, when he was, you know, to create the world, he wasn't going to give what he calls a Chomer Avagas, which means like really obtuse and like really like heavy type of physicality, but rather Hashem was playing great with a Chomer Zach Vidak, like very light, very, you know, very light on the physicality and, you know, heavy on the Ruchness. Lamaisa, that's not what happened. Lamaisa, we have Chomer Avagas. We'll see why that happened exactly, but he says that if we had Chomer Dach Vizach and not Avagas, so then we would have been on that Madriga of a Malachim, of being able to perceive Hashem and being able to understand Hashem. That's not what happened, so that's not the way it works. Fine. Now, we know, of course, the famous Rashi, the opening Rashi in the Chumash, right? We quote that the reason why the Torah starts with Bereishis instead of jumping to Achodesh Zalachem is because otherwise the guy would say, oh, you're listing, you stole the land, Eretz Yisrael from the Shiva Amunus. So the Eker says, who cares what the Goyim say? Why are we starting the Torah with Bereishis Bara? Because we're afraid the Goyim are going to say, who cares what the Goyim say? Why is that determined how the Torah should begin? So the Kliyakar says it's much more than you know, what the Goyim are going to say. He says, if we don't have Bereishis Bara, then the whole religion falls to the wayside. We have, you know, there's a serious notion of kfira that can pop up if you don't have the tenets of faith that are presented in the beginning of Bereishis. Because the Ubos Olam, and not only them, but people will say that there's no, you know, they're going to say, let's die. And there's no judge, there's no HaKadosh Baruch Hu, no one runs the world. The Haraya, and there was the idea of Kol Dalim Gvar, you know, the strongest man wins. The Haraya, they say that if there was really a God, so how come he didn't punish you for stealing the land from the Shiva Amin? So that's why the Torah says, oh, Kamash Malan, that the land was really ours all along, that we owned it, Hashem gave it to us, and they took it from us, and then Hashem gave it back to us what was really rightfully ours all along. Now, the Kliyakar points out also, he says that the chit that was being discussed here, that the Umos Olam theoretically might have thought was so bad, was the chit of Gezel. So, okay, so Gezel's a chit, it's an Avera, but why is Gezel like the thing that we look at? But not only that, we know that Rashi in the beginning of Noah quotes Marsan Edger that was the thing that sealed the fate of Dormammu, was Gezel. So, like, what? They also did Arayos, or it's a really bad answer, so why was Gezel the thing that did them in? So the Kliyakar is a beautiful idea. He says that Gezel is a horrible Isser, but it's also an Isser which relates to Kfira. Because the idea of Gezel basically is that you'd say, Hashem, I don't trust that the money you give me is going to be enough for me to support myself. I have to go steal from somebody else. And he says, in fact, if you look at the first mitzvah that we get, Achodesh Hazel Lachem, Lachem is Mishalachem, it can't be, right, La'afuke Gezel, and it says, Mishku Uklu Lachem, so by the current Pesach, it has to be yours, it can't be Mina Gezel. And he quotes from Parshas Toldos when Yitzchak tells Esav to go hunt for him, the Tzud Alitzayat, Rashi quotes Mina Hefker, Velo Mina Gezel, and that's why Hashem set it up in such a way that Yaakov would be the one to bring him the game, the food to eat, because he knew that Esav would take from Gezel, and Yitzchak, in principle, didn't want to eat from Gezel. And of course, we know that's the famous drasha that Rashi, in the beginning of Vayikra, quotes, Adam ki Yaakov v'kem karban la'Hashem. Rashi says that it has to be Adam Arishon. Adam Arishon was the only person alive in the world at the time, so by definition, his karban wasn't Gezel. There was no one to steal from, so every time you bear karban, it has to be like Adam. It has to be without Gezel. The focus of Gezel, the Kliyakar says, is because Gezel represents kfira not pikorsus. If you steal, it shows that you don't trust Hashem enough that he's going to give you what you need. The Kliyakar just points out, he just says, even without this, you know, Rashi asked the question, it was like a throwaway. He's like, why does the Torah start? Why doesn't the Torah start with the Chodesh Lachem? You know, why don't you skip all Bereishis? Kliyakar says, what do you mean skip all Bereishis? Bereishis is the basic tenets of faith. What do you mean? You can't just jump into a mitzvah aleph without you know, giving background with, you know, to where the religion came from and how we know God exists. I mean, those are extremely important things. You can't just throw that away and be like, say for a chinuch mitzvah aleph, you know, throw away a munah b'Hashem. It's not a thing. So the Kliyakar says, and he says, more than that also, even if you accept Rashi's premise somehow, so then the question becomes, Rashi only explains to you when he says, oh, koach masur higil liyamo, the idea that Hashem wants to tell us what happened with, you know, with Eretz Yisrael, that only explains the immediate story of my separation. It doesn't explain, what about every other story in Sefer Bereishis? What about the beginning of Sefer Shemos, or the first three parashas of Shemos? What about those stories? So the Kliyakar says, in reality, every story in Bereishis really has an important lesson. Dora Mabul teaches it's Tzchai V'Onesh. And the truth is that there are certain mitzvahs in Bereishis, like Kuruvu, Yekir Anashe, Menachai, Red Bris Mila, you do have certain things here and there in Sefer Bereishis. And he says, Rashi really was saying the following. In reality, the Torah, we know, the way we view Torah, the Iker of Torah is that it was given primarily for mitzvahs. So therefore, it makes sense Torah should start with the mitzvah, Chodesh Lachem. That would make a lot of sense. So the question is not, let's skip Bereishis. The question is, let's put Bereishis at the end of the Torah, because that's not the Iker. The Iker is the mitzvahs. So let's start with the mitzvahs and then put Bereishis at the end. The problem is, if we did that, so then when people would see the mitzvah, the Chodesh Hazel Lachem, they would think the Moshe made up the mitzvah on his own. Why? Because they say, yeah, you stole the land from the Shiva Am. So of course you're going to say, Moshe says Elohim. So in order to dispel that notion that Moshe invented the halacha on his own, the opening statement of the Torah is no. The land always belonged. Hashem gave it to us. You took it from us, and now Hashem's going to give it back to us. So that's why we need to start the Torah with that idea, so nobody thinks that the land ever belonged to them. But then also, and obviously, the Torah just points out that, you know, Apushuto, the reason why the Torah starts with Bereishis is obviously because Bria's Olam is a foundational tenet. That's what all of the religion is based on. Because if you assume that there was a world before HaKadosh Baruch Hu existed, so then there's no room to accept, you know, the validity of the Torah, and you could throw out the entire Torah because it just doesn't shtim with the idea that, you know, that there was a world before Hashem. But Yor HaChaim quotes an idea, you know, Rashi makes reference to this idea in a few places, that really everything in Bria's Olam was created on the first day, but it came into being on subsequent days, right? In other words, the sun was really created on the first day, but it only Hashem set it into the heavens on the fourth day, right? So in other words, the Kli Yakar gives a mushel to that. He says, let's say you have a carpenter. So a carpenter, he says, let's say he's building a house, so he's going to gather all of his materials on the first day, but he won't actually necessarily put them into place until subsequent days. He's not going to, you know, lay the bricks before he built the fountain, before he laid the foundation, right? So really, he's going to bring his bricks and bring the cement and bring everything on the first day, but he won't actually put it into place until that, you know, the day on which it's ready to do. The Kli Yakar also puts it interestingly that the Torah never specifies the creation of fire, right? We see Eish, we see Mayim, we see Ruach. What happened to fire? So we know that fire is one of the Yesodos, one of the four, you know, the four primary elements, right? So he says that the reason why fire is not mentioned is because fire can be destructive, it can destroy the world. That's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't explicitly bring out the Koach of fire. He leaves it in its potential state up in the Shamayim, and he only extracts the shear of fire when it's necessary. And he says, like, when we say Borei Me'orei HaEish during Havdalah, Motzi Shabbos, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes out a little bit of, like, the nitzots of Ish from Shamayim, and he brings it down into this world. Then the Or HaChaim says, why did the Torah just write Beferish, write all the things that Hashem created? Why did it have to say, you know, when Hashem created Shemayim Arz, we have to figure it out that He created the Mayim, and we created everything else, and the Ish? Why did it just write what Hashem created? So first of all, the Or HaChaim says that the Torah wants to reveal to us its secrets, and it won't hold anything back because of the Shoth, which is an important idea. You know, the before I should talk about this in a lot of places, how come if Hashem really, if there was really a God, how come He doesn't just stop the sun from running because they're Uvdei Hacham or Uvdei Levana? So the answer is because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not going to destroy the world for the five morons who are worshiping the sun, right? That's not the way Hashem works, right? So in other words, the Torah is going to tell us all secrets. It's going to reveal to us the things, the secrets of Bria Solom, even though probably not explicitly, but it's going to reveal to us in Bria Solom, and we're not going to care about the five people who think, you know, that they know better. Fine. Then the Kli Yakar also points out that HaKadosh Baruch Hu flipped the order in creation between Dibur and Ruach about what was created first, because in the way in which He created the Malachim on the second day, so that people shouldn't say that the Malachim had any sort of input in Bria Sa'olam. Hashem did not allow the Malachim to actually have a physical ability to speak, or to whatever speech is for them. He gave them the Ruach before, He created the Dibur before the Ruach, for they had the ability to think, because He didn't want them to, think they participate in Bria Sa'olam. Also, he's talking the context of Bereishis. This is actually a general, very important yisod in general, that he says that we discuss why it is. A lot of times you find in the Gemara, and we've shown him, you find the Gemara, let's say, well, Darshan HaPasuk, let's say, if, I'll be Jewish, well, Darshan HaPasuk in Tanakh somewhere, and then you look at the Mepharshim of the Pasuk, they don't even, like, they're not even Messiah, it's the Gemara. And so the Orchaz is a very important yisod. He says that when it comes to Darshan HaPasukim and saying Drashas, he says, you're not Meshuba to what the Rishon, what earlier generation, the Gemara, what the Rishonim said. So when it comes to what he calls Mashma'os HaKasuv, you know, so he has this Drashas. Yeah, that Rava said like this, the Radak said like that. It's all legitimate. You can say whatever you want. So when it comes to halacha, so then you can't play around. When it comes to halacha, you have to, you know, abide by whatever the halacha is. He says that in the context of Bereishis, but it's really assumed in general. Then he also says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will do rachamim only for a person who wants rachamim, and a person who doesn't want to bring din on himself, what should he do? So the Gemara Rashan already says this. He should be mochel v'solech. If a person's mevater, right? Let me no say avov over al pet. Right? If a person's no say avov over al pet, person is mevater when another person does something bad to him. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, wow, that person, you know, has a lot of koach. He's a giwer. He's not gonna be makpid about his kavod. So Hashem says, I'm gonna be mevater of my kavod also for him. Then Kli Yakar, the Or HaChaim also says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, again, we'll point a little bit later, you know, the Rashi says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to create the world with din, the answer that it wouldn't last. So what that means is a little bit beyond the scope of anything I know. But the Or HaChaim says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he was never chozer from his original machshava. He did create the world with din. It's just that he added rachamim later. Meaning, Rashi made it sound like Hashem, like, almost went back on his original das. It's like, well, din doesn't work, let me throw in rachamim. The Or HaChaim says, no. The din stayed there. It was combined. Hashem, like, threw in rachamim for good luck just to make the world stand, make the world last. The Archive also says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the Shemayim before the earth. It's a little bit weird. Like, when you build a house, you don't build the roof and then the house. You build the house first. So he says the reason why Hashem did that is to show that everything in the world depends on his word and that nothing can last without it. So he Davka built it in the opposite way from what we would think. Archive also says that if a person zochet the Torah, he'll be zochet to all the hanos of this world. And Hashem informed us that he created this world through the Torah. So by the Torah, we're zochet to hanos olam hazeh. Archive also says that there's two types of yira. Yira sa'onesh and yira sa'rom. So he says Yiras HaRomimus is the more internal and the greater type of Yira. And he says Elokim, the Shem of Din, represents Yiras HaOnesh. So he says when the Torah says Es HaShemayim V'Yasa'aretz, that refers to Romimus. Why? Because when a person contemplates the way that the Bria, the messages of the world, the Bria Sa'olam, he's filled with the sense of Hislavus and of Yira, of the greatness of Hashem. Alternatively, he says maybe Shemayim is Yiras HaOnesh and Aretz is Yiras Shemayim is Yiras HaRomimus and Aretz is Yiras HaOnesh. The first shot with the Archaim was that they're both together Yiras HaRomimus because they represent the idea that of the majesty of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu created. Archaim also says interestingly, we always say that the name Elokim represents Din. Archaim says it's not really true. Elokim really is Chesed. It's just that he carries out Din to those who do evil, to those who sin. Hashem also carries out Din with them. Then the Archaim says that the letters, the Archaim has 22 Pshatim on the words Bereishis Bara. So these are all part of his Pshatim from Bereishis Bara. That's why they're very, very sporadic and kind of scattered around. But yeah. So anyway, he says that when the letters, he says generally when you spell a word, when the letters are backwards, so that represents Din. The B'nai Yisachar, most of the Sefer is about all the different months. Every month that the Jewish calendar has what's called the Tzirufei Shem Havaya. It's a different formulation of the name of Hashem. So I think it was in Nisan is Yudkei Vavkei. That's a normal name. And like an Av, which is all, Av is all bad, so it's all backwards, right? So he says the name Tishrei, the Tufshin Reish are back, right? It's from the last letter to the second to last letter to the third to last letter of the Aleph base. So he says that's Din. Tish, and he says Tishrei is the month. This man Din Gadol, right? Makes sense. But Hashem threw in a Yud because he was Meshat Efrachim. Just like Briyas Olam, he throws in the Yud as well. Then the Orchaim says that Gehenim and Ganeden, the Gemara says Msachim and Adarim, that Gehenim and Ganeden were two of the things that were created before the world, before Briyas Olam, because Hashem wanted to instill a concept of Schar Va'onesh and of Yirah Va'ava into the Torah. So he created those things that represent those ideas before the Torah was even given. Gemara Brachos, the Orchaim quote says that if a person has Yirah Shemayim, then Dvarav Nishmayim, his words will be heard. He says what that means is that because the Musar that person has comes from his Neshama, not from his Guf. When a person has real Yirah Shemayim, so he bettering himself is coming from his Neshama and not from his guf. Fine. Then he says that originally the Shemayim and the Aretz were created on equal footing because we were created from the Adama, right? We came from the Adama, but also we had a Tzuras HaMalach. We were also in a sense like Malachim, but once Adam HaRishon sinned, we defiled the land, and only the Or of Torah, the Or HaKadosh, can bring the land back up to par to the level of Shemayim. Then the Or HaKadosh has a fascinating idea. He says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu could, if he wanted to, dwell in Shemayim, Ba'arafel, right? You know, Shochenai, we see HaKadosh Baruch Hu dwells, you know, on high, but we know Rashi and Vayetze quotes, right, on the Pasuk, Zeshara Shemayim. The Gemara says in Titus that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will not enter Yerushalayim Shalmala Ad Sheyavo Yerushalayim Shalmata. So what does that mean? He said because the whole point of the Bria is for us, it's for the Tachton, it's for this world, not for the Olamos HaOnim, and therefore this world is more Chashem. The Archive says that's why the Torah says Isa Shemayim VeYisa Aretz, it's right. It's written in the format of Lo Zuafsu. In other words, HaKadosh Baruch created the Shemayim, and Kal Vachomer he created the Aretz, because the Aretz is the main tachlis of the Bria. That the real reason for the Bria is because of us. That's why that the Bria really happened because of us, because we're here. Orchaim also has an interesting idea. He says that our Avirus prevent Hashem from dwelling on the land. They cause gullus. He says the word Tohu in Gematria is 411, and Bohu is 19, which totals of 430, which is the years of gullus. That's right, calculated from time of Yitzchak, right? And he says, of course, all the Mefarshim point this out. The Maharal has an idea like this also, that the Tohu, Bohu, Choshech, and Psukim in the beginning of the Parsha are all allusions to various gullios that we've gone through. Gullus Bavel, Gullus Edom, right, all these different things. And he says that Choshech al Penei Sohom is the gullus that we're currently in. And when he was writing this, he says that we have been in for the last 1,671 years. And he says it's bad enough that it alludes to the Orech HaGullus, but not only that, but it also alludes to the subjugation that the nations have imposed on us, right, and the heavy taxes they give to us. And he says praiseworthy is a person who hasn't seen this. And he says specifically here in the West, I think he lives in Spain, I'm pretty sure. And he says that also the Yetzer Hara, which is dark in the light of the world, and there have been more Pritzei Yisrael. And he says that just because, he says that Hashem says that the Or is not a guarantee that Mashiach will come and the Golus will end, but it's only when we're Ozing B'Torah that will guarantee that Mashiach will come eventually. Fine. Then the Pasuk is, so the Kliyaker writes that from Shish to Bereshis until today, nothing has changed. Nothing in the world has changed at all from the way it was. And he says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu anticipated when he created the world the theoretical Maisa Rishayim, which could destroy the world. We know that in many places, the Gemara points out, you know, Hashem says, Malachim, you know, be quiet, otherwise I'm going to revert the world to Tohu Vavohu, right? These kinds of things. So the question is, what do you mean? How can Hashem just say, I'm going to revert the world to Tohu Vavohu? The world is the world. So the Kli Yakar says, no. He says, really, he says, the etzim of the world is that it should be Tohu Vavohu. That's like the Ikar Adin. The world's really Tohu Vavohu. How come it's not? Because there's a chiddush that when the tzaddikim do mitzvos, they bump the world up to what it is today. So he says the starting point is when they don't do mitzvos, when they're aviros, it's not that I'm going to change anything. I'm just going to go back to the original thing, to what the world really should be, which is Tohu Vavohu. So he says that in that sense, Hashem's not changing anything. The world is going to run the way it always ran. Plus, if I hear Rabbi Hooker Yom Echad, right? So Rashi, right? Of course, quotes from from Chazal. Why Yom Echad, not Yom Rishon? Because Rashi on that day Hashem was the only being in the world, not the Malachim weren't created. The Kli Yakar says that the reason why it doesn't say Yom Rishon, he says the Chazal say that Midas Yom is mentioned by Laila. Midas Laila is mentioned by Laila. So we say in the brach, the first brach by Mariv, right? We say, before that. Say Golil or Mipnei Choshech v'Choshech Mipnei Yor. In other words, there's always a mention of Laila by Yom and Yom by Laila during in the bracha by in the morning, where we say Yotzer or Vorei Choshech. So we mention Choshech by Yom and we mention Yom Afilu by Laila. So he says, why do we do that? Because we're trying to dispel the heretical notion that people may have that there's no way that one God could have possibly created two opposites. It doesn't make sense. You have a God who creates Or and Choshech, Tov and Ra, you know, Yom and Laila, those kinds of things. It's hard to understand how the same God could create things that are complete opposites, that are, you know, diametrically opposed to one another, and therefore they decreed to say that that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who the Kofrim say, oh, if the one who created light obviously did not create darkness. So to say against that, we said Vayhi Erev, Vayhi Boker, it's the same God. He's the Erev who created Boker or Choshech, right? It's all the same thing. It was all Echad. Fine. And the pasuk says Yehi Rakia. So the Kli Yakar has a beautiful idea here. He quotes a Gemara Chagiga, where the Gemara says that man is creator is comprised of Eretz, the Yam, and the Rakia. We come in, again, different elements and different aspects from those three things. And he says, what's the common denominator between those three things? They're all very vast. They're almost endless in a sense, right? The Shamayim, the Aretz, and the Yam. They go on and on and on. So he says like this. He says every person. I'm sorry. He said before. He says Rashi, beginning of the parsha, quotes the pasuk in Iyov that when Hashem yelled at the Shamayim, it stiffened, right? It says Shamayim Yisro Fafa, I think it was. It says the Shamayim, it was wet, and then it congealed when Hashem yelled, it roared, and the Shamayim just stiffened right away. So it says every person, the Kli Yakar says, is created with certain predispositions, certain inclinations, netios, taivos, right, things like that. So he says a person could have a legitimate taina to Hashem and say, listen, you know, he comes up to Shamayim after 120, and he says, Hashem says, why did you do this up here? Why did you do that up here? He says, what do you want from me? You created me like an angry person. You created me like a Baal Taiva. You created me like a person who likes money. What do you want from me? So the Kli Yakar says, no, that's not a good title. Why not? He says, look at the three things that we're created from. They're endless, they're vast, they go on and on and on, and yet, the second Hashem yelled at them, they froze, they just stopped. He says, yeah, we have a lot of taivas, we have a lot of natias, we have a lot of whatever. He says, the second Hashem gives you, you have to stop, you have to harness your taivas, and you have to know how to keep yourself in check, even though we have endless amounts of taiva. Now he says, the question is like this, he says that, how could it be that man, with his own intellect, how could it be that he didn't draw boundaries? Meaning, why did the Torah have close to us? Why did it's like a chiddush? I would have thought I could do whatever I want. Kabash Malon, you have to harness your taivas. Like, good morning. Of course, you have to harness your taivas. How does the Torah work? I can go around murdering people. We'll see later. My kind in heaven. This idea comes up again. Also, so what was the havim? I can just go around and do whatever I want. So the Kli Yakar says, no. Again, it's a throwback to this idea also that the Eretz and the Shemaim and the Yam, Hashem had to like yell at them to keep them in check. So again, apparently there was a havim that it's like a hefker velt and Kabash Malon. You have to keep things in check a little bit. Fine. And the Kli Yakar just points out also, he says, it says vayhi or by when the or was created, but it doesn't say vayhi rakia, it says yehi rakia. What's the difference? He says, because by we know that the rakia was as machlokas, the maimah and matan were split, that's something negative. So he says, the word vayhi is like something which happens immediately, vayhi or, right? The or was right there. So because the rakia had negative connotations of machlokas, Hashem didn't want it to be an immediate creation, he wanted it to be a little bit slower. The or was positive, so that happened right away, that happened, that was created immediately.
The Or HaChaim says that on the first day of creation, the physical shape of the Rekia was formed, and on the second day, Hashem spread like a curtain to be mavil between the different, the Mayim Aliyonim and the Mayim HaTachtonim. The Kli Yakar says, if it's Vayikra Elokim LaRekia Shemayim, so we mentioned already before, that Hashem did not want to call it the Rekia initially, because the word Rekia implies divisiveness and Pirud, right? Parsh Korach, Vayirakeu Pacheya Zahav, right? That was the whole thing with the fire pans, right? They were that with Aaron and Korach, and it says Luroka Ha'aretz Alamayim. There's like a split between the heavens and the earth. So he says that a rakia is like a covering which separates two things. That's why he doesn't say kitov. That was the day on which machlokas was created, etc. And the Kli Yakar says that you only find good in a situation where you have achdus, where you have unity. That's why it doesn't say kitov on the second day. It says twice on the third day when there was achdus. The pasuk says yikavu amayim mitachas hashemen el makom echad, which represents the idea of achdus. So he says, so what was it called instead? It wasn't called rakia. It was called shamayim. What does shamayim mean? So he says, we know Rashi quotes in one shot, the shamayim means ish umayim, right? It's a fusion of fire and water. So the Kli Yakar has a beautiful idea. He quotes from a Mishnah in Avos. The Mishnah in Avos says that kol machlokes shehi l'shem shamayim sofa l'hiskayim. What does that mean? He says the ish umayim are two opposites that put aside their differences and formed one entity of the shamayim. So he says, if you have a machlokes, the only way to have a lasting machlokes is if you're like the shamayim. If your machlokes is l'shem, it's like shamayim. If you put aside your differences fundamentally and you're arguing for the right reasons, then so full of his kind, then the machlokas is going to last. And then the clear says, Apipshuto, the reason why it doesn't say Kitov on the second day is because nothing new is created, because we said the Rekia on the first day. And again, because the reason for machlokas, like I said before, that's why it wasn't mentioned a second time. Fine. This is a great. So, the pasuk is Eitz Peri Osa Peri Lemino. We know that Rashi quotes the famous Gemara in Chulin that says that it was supposed to be the Tama Eitz Ketama Peri, that the bark was supposed to taste like the fruit, but the trees didn't listen to Hashem, and then they ended up only the fruit tastes like the fruit, but not the bark. So there's a lot of problems. First of all, how do you not listen to Hashem? Which we'll see in the Or HaChaim. I was going to ask Kashmir. The Kliyakar also addresses in a little bit of a different light. How trees are inanimate objects? They're not Bechkiro. I mean, how could you listen to Hashem? And they were punished for it apparently also. Aruha Adama Bavurecha. So the first question is, why were they only punished when Adam leaders in the Rashi addresses that question also, but also Bechlawa are they punished? We know Rashi in Nitzavim writes at the end of Nitzavim, Rashi says that inanimate object, he says, look to the Shemayim Vaaretz, they don't have any vested interest in listening to me because there's no Schar Va'onesh, and yet they follow my word. So you, B'nai Adam, who have that, you have Schar Va'onesh, you should listen to me. So first of all, you see, it's not true. There is Schar Va'onesh for them. They got punished. They got punished for not listening to Hashem. So the Kli Yakar writes it. He says every tree is called an Eitz Shel Pri. Every tree, in a sense, produces fruit. Some literal and some produce something medicinal purposes, right? There's something which every tree produces. So what does Osep Prelimino mean? So that's a throwback to Parsha Shoftim, right, of Ki Ha'adam Eitz HaSadeh. The notion that we are like a tree, both in terms of height and in terms of the fact that we last for a long time, that we last from year to year or beyond. And he says everything else that grows, shrubbery and herbage and vegetables, things like that, so that relates to the fact they're very low in stature, they don't have any roots or branches, they're more like animals. And he says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created types of foods that are beneficial for our health, for our physical makeup. And he says that he combined every species to allow us to allow the animals to live. That's what it says, Umasbiya l'chol chai ratzon. Right? What does that mean? In other words, something which is his ratzon, which is, in other words, Hashem created things that will allow you to live that are l'chol chai ratzon, that are like matim for you, that fit well with your diet, that fit well with what you're supposed to be. And that's why it says, l'chol chai yasa aretz es kol yerek isev le'achla. Right? In other words, because isev is only good for a living creature that lacks physicality. But by man, it says, Hinei nasati lechem es kol isev ve'es kol ha'eitz asher bo pri'eitz. So we have more than just the asev, because we also have a physical component. So therefore, he says that the thing the animals eat are also good, right? You could also eat salad. You could also have, right, the shrubbery and the vegetables and whatever. But there's also additionally, there's also the pri'eitz. This is obviously before there was a heter to eat meat. This is in the Marishon time, right? So there's the pri'eitz is good for him. And then he says that each species grows according to its min. That's why it says osep pri limino. In other words, man is an osa prelimino. Man is a mixed species. We benefit from the food the animals eat, but also from additional types of food which only we eat. But he says when it comes to the Esev Mazria Zera, it doesn't say limino because it's also fitting for man, even though it's not our species. It's not the stuff that we eat, but in terms of making them, it says limineu, relates to the physical aspects of man that we can still benefit from it. Now, the question is though, Chazal say that the land sinned, right, because it didn't listen to Hashem. So, but the problem is that, as we said before, that the land was only punished when Adam sinned, right? It says, when Adam sinned, the Torah says, Aruha Adama Bavurach. So why wasn't the land punished right away? right? What was the sight in the land? Didn't listen to Hashem, should have been punished. What was the only punished once Adam sinned? So the Kliyaker says, well, think about it. What would the curse of the Adama be? The curse is, he says, that they would produce, instead of, you know, it would, you know, thorns, and it would have mosquitoes and gnats and bugs and all these. So who is that a problem for? The land's just sitting there. The land's not doing anything. It only negatively affects man, right? The fact that it's harder to produce food, the fact that you have more bugs in the field, doesn't do anything to the land. The land's still sitting there. It affects mankind. So as long as Adam didn't sin, it wasn't fair that he should have that curse, because the curse really affected him more than it affected the land. But once Adam sinned, then the land reverted back to like the Ikra did of what the curse was supposed to be all along. Also, the Kliyaker says, Parsha Harim, after the Parsha Arayos, the Torah says, Vatitma ha'aretz v'efkod avuna aleha. Right, the land is associated with Arayos. Remember the rites, it says Vatuki Aretz Eschem B'Tamach. So the land spits you out when you right when there's Arayos. It can't handle Eretz, so it can't handle that. So he says that Akadosh Baruch Hu, as we mentioned before, his will was to originally to give us a sense of Chomer Zach V'Dak, a lighter, you know, refined sense of physicality as opposed to the Chomer that we actually have. But he gave us a Chomer Gas V'Ava. And he says if the Chomer had been Zach V'Dak, so then in reality every tree would have been Tama Eitz K'tabri. The barks would have tasted just like the fruit, and mankind would not have been inclined to go after his senses and go after his taiva and go after all of his physical, you know, ideas, and he wouldn't come to sin. But because our physicality is not like that, because our physicality is gas va'ava, therefore tama eats not ketama pri, and that caused man to sin. That's why it says vatifkod avona aleh. All of our avirus are always, it always harkens back to the fact that the land, or the fact that we are given, is more obtuse sense of physicality as opposed to the lighter, more refined one. Now the Kliyaker also points out that the Nachash noticed that the land ignored Hashem's ratzon, and it didn't seem to have been punished, at least immediately. It was only punished later on, right? So that's where the Nachash found a legitimate ground to sit. Chava lo mos timusud. If you ignore Hashem's will, look at the land. The land said nothing happened to it. So you too, you'll sit and nothing will happen to you. That's where the Nachash says, the Chava afki amar lokim lo sochlu mikol etzagan. In other words, the tree itself is Roy Lachila. In other words, no one denied the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu said you can't eat from the tree itself. Ilo sochlu mikol eitz hagan, to which Chava responds, mi pri eitz hagan nochel. We're allowed to eat. In other words, she says, I agree that only the priya eitz are Roy Lachila, meaning, in general, most of the trees I can eat the priya eitz and not the eitz hadas. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu never commanded about touching or about the barks or about anything like that. So he says, then you admit that the fact bark doesn't taste like the fruit means that the land ignored Hashem's will, which means that when you eat from the fruit, nothing's going to happen to you either. That's why he was focusing on the pre-eitz hagan and not on the actual eitz. Now, the Or Chaim has said, gosh, how could the trees be morayed by Hashem? What does that mean? So the Or Chaim has a fascinating idea. He says that initially there was only supposed to be fruit-bearing trees in the world. There were supposed to be fruit-bearing trees with Tama Eitz K'tama Pri, and then there were supposed to be fruit-bearing trees with Tama Shalok K'tama Pri. So what actually happened? So he says there were three types of trees that were created. You have Tama Eitz K'tama Pri that bear fruit. You have bearing fruit trees that don't have Tama Eitz K'tama Pri, and then you have the Stami Lani Srak, non-fruit-bearing trees B'chlal. So he says that the Eitz Hadas Tovara was an example of a fruit-bearing tree that had Tama Eitz K'tama Pri. That was like the highest level tree. He says that it's not that the Adama sinned, it's not that the Adama thought it was sinning. The Adama tried to be Mizaris itself to do Ratzon Hashem even better way. It wanted to produce three types of trees that would be what they thought would be Makayim Hashem's Ratzon in the highest level, but it turned out that they kind of overshot it, kind of like the Baal Tosef with Adam and with Chava and the Nachash, right? So they kind of overshot it a little bit, but apparently their Kavana was good. The Pasuk says on the fourth day of Brit Yisrael, Yehi Ma'oros Birkiya HaShemayim. So when Rashi quotes the word Ma'oros is written Chaser, because it's Yom Me'ira on Wednesday, right? The Gemara in Titus says that we daven that Askara shouldn't befall the Tinokos, right? So the Kliyaker says that, again, it's written Chaser. So he says that the reason, so how come there's a curse with the sun and the moon? Like, why Dafka that? So he says that the Ma'oros are a function of the time. And we know that sun represents the day, the moon represents the night, right? Everything's bound by time. So he says anything which is constricted by time, by definition, has Tsar. Like Chazal, Gemara, Megillah, Daf Yud, that says the word Vayahi is Lashon Tsar. Ultimately, the Gemara concludes that it's not really true. The word Vayahi is not always Tsar. Sometimes it is, sometimes it's not. But Vayahi Bimei, the Gemara says, Vayahi Bimei Achashver, Vayahi Bimei is always Lashon Tsar. What does that mean? He says anything which is Bimei, which depends on the Yomim, which is constricted by time, that has Tsar. But everything which is in the upper realm, which is Lamalam and Azman, Lamalam and Ateva, so those things, and they're not ruled by Azman, then there's no Tsar in those things. That's why it says the word Ma'oros is written Chaser. Everything under the sun, everything bound by time, is by definition constricted to Tsar, to a curse, but everything that's Lamalam from that, that's not bound by Tzad. Okay. Now, so the pasuk says on the fifth day, he says Yeshutu Amayim Sheret Nefesh Chayava Ofil Fif Al Aretz. Right, HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates the Shratzim and the Ofos and the Dagim on the fifth day. So the Kliyaker says that there are three types of animals. You have Behemos, Ofos, and Dagim. Okay, and he says that they correspond to three types of people. The Rishayim are Nimshal Kabehemos Nimu. They're like the Behemos. Rashi quotes that the Ofos were created from Rakak, which is a mixture of Afar and Mayim. So they're the Bein, and they're somewhere in the middle. And the Dagim are the Tzadikim. They're like the Yam, the Mayim, which is light, which doesn't have any of the Chomer of the Adama. So this is also based on the Kliyaker Parsha Shmini. It's tied to this part also. The Kliyaker in Shmini says that there are three different dinim of shechita for different animals. A behema, the din is it requires rov shechitas beis simanim. You have to shecht the majority of both the trachea and the esophagus. The ov only requires rov shechitas siman echad, and a dog doesn't need shechita at all. The din is a gemara says include. You can just, if you pick the dog out of the ocean, you can just eat it, right? There's no din of shechita by a dog at all. So he says, what's the difference? He says that the higher level gashmius there is for the animal, the higher level shechita requires. The behema is the most gashmi, so he has the higher level, it is the highest level shechita. The ov is in the middle, so he's only one siman. The dog is completely ruchni, so it doesn't need shechita at all. And the Kliyaker here in Bereishis is a cute vart. He says that in the Parshat Bahaluscha, so the Asaf, so if the Erev Rav, what was their chit? They asked for meat and fish. So he says they should have asked for ofos because they were Beinanim. So the Beinanim match up with the ofos, but they were asking for the wrong foods because it didn't match up to who they really were. Fine. Then. Okay, fine. Then he says, oh, it's interesting. The Or Chaim is an interesting idea. He says, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu only give a bracha to the Sheretz Ha'aretz, but not to the Sheretz Ha'ov? In the Pesukim, right, it says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was Vaivarech, right, with Pru Revu Meluas Ha'aretz. He only gave the bracha to the Sheretz Ha'aretz, not to the Sheretz Ha'ov. Is it HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mimatel Kinab, my separations? Why did he do that? So HaKadosh is a beautiful idea. He says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, first of all, only commanded that these animals should reproduce for that specific time period. He says, by nature, he says something which is ish, which is fire, which is hot, that is a koach hamolid. That will cause or spur birth to happen, as opposed to something which is cold or core, usually prevents, whole lot usually prevents birth from happening. So by nature, fish are in the water. It's cold in the water. So they should not be able to give birth naturally. Therefore, a Kadosh Baruch Hu needed to give them an extra bracha, that they should be able to give birth. The regular animals didn't need that bracha, because they were going to give birth anyway. Fine. Then the pasuk is very famous. Nasa Adam Etzalmenu Kid Musenu. So the Kliyaker quotes from the Ramban in the name of the Radak, who says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Nasa Adam is not referring to the multiple gods or to the Malach. Where the Malach, like Rashi says, it means that Hashem told the land that you and I together will produce man. We're going to make man together because the land is what gives forth the physical, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu infuses it with the spiritual. So it's Hashem and the land together. The Or Chaim says the word Nasa refers to the multiple midos of Hashem, like Din and Rakam together came together to combine and to create man. Fine. Then the pasuk says, "Keep it selim alukim asah esah adam." So the Kliyaker says that refers to the wonder, the pele of man's uniqueness apart from other creatures. Right? It says naaseh to demonstrate that HaKadosh Baruch Hu rules his, he has dominion over, you know, specifically when he created man, to show that the way that he rules the world is dafka in creation of man. Mankind is the greatest Hashem's honor, as opposed to all the other animals. We have David Ivor, we're Salamu Dumos Hashem, right? We're Salam Alukim. So he says, not only that, the Gemara says that the concept of Salamu Dumos Hashem is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu appears to the Nevi'im in a human form. The Gemara says that in Har Sinai, Hashem appeared like an old man, like a Zakein, who was sitting there. And by Kriyas Yamsuf, he appeared like a Gibor, right? Hashem Ishmael, right? Hashem was a Hashem Ishmael Chama, right? He looked like a Gibor. And he says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu frequently appears to the Nevi'im with different images, and that's what we say, Bitsalmenu Kid Musenu, meaning that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he doesn't have an image, but it's the way that he appears to us. That's how we view it. It's almost like when Rashi always quotes, in the Pesukim, it says, "Biyar Chazak of Zorah Tui." It doesn't literally mean that. It means it's Lasabra Soza, just as a way to understand. The pasuk says, "V'yirdu b'dgas ayemu va'ofas shamayim reva behema." The Kliyaker points out in the Parshas Noach, the order is reversed. It says, "Morachem v'chetchem hiya al kol chayas aretz ve'al kol ofas shamayim v'chol dgei hayam." So it's backwards. Here it's the fish, the birds, and the animals, and there Noach, it's the animals, the birds, and the fish. This is why is the order swap. He says in Tehillim also, we find that the order switch also in Parak Kuf Dalet by David Hamelchi also, he makes a lot of references to Bria Sa'ola. So the Kliyaker has a fascinating idea. He says that each of these three types of animals, there's a way in which it's easier or harder to capture them than others. A behema, he says, the behemoths are the easiest animals to catch because they're just sitting there. They're just there, right? You can catch maybe a cow. It's very easy to catch it and to shecht or to kill the animal. It's very easy to run after them. Ophos can fly, so a lot harder to catch. but they're better than Dagim because at least you can see the Ophelos, right? A dog, so he says, first of all, we can't swim that deep. You can't swim like all the way down to the bottom of the ocean. It's only an extent to how far you can go. And he says, also, you can't see the Dagim, right? Again, this is before whatever. But he says, you can't see the Dagim. You can see, at least you can see the Ophelos. You got a shot. So he says, each of those, it's harder and harder to catch. So he says, the order of the Psukim is here towards the inverses is Viyirdu. So Viyirdu means to rule over. So the Torah is telling you, it's going like Lozuafsu. It's like a Chiddush. You're going to even rule over the Degas Hayam. It's crazy. Degas, how am I going to catch the Degas Hayam? They're all the way down. I can't see them. I can't swim. You're going to rule even, and then Pusher, even the Ophashayim, and certainly the Behemoth. But in Noach, it's talking about, you know, the level of Mora, how much fear the animals will have for you, or how much fear, you know, you give based on your level of Avodas Hashem. So that's not totally on, you know, on how easy it is to catch. That's a separate point. Lora Chaim says the word Viyirdu represents our spiritual descent to the state of being animal-like when we sin and we don't listen to the Ratzon of Hashem. Pasuk says, "Vayara lokim es kol asher asav hinei tov meod." Everyone talks about this. What does tov meod mean? So the Kliyaker says it's just a very pashut idea, but it's a beautiful idea. He says that on every day of creation it was just ki tov. So why is it all of a sudden hinei tov meod? He says because to teach us that everything created up until that point was only done for the creation of man. And therefore, he says, everything was almost like tolli va'omi. Whether those things were going to be good. They were good, but they weren't tov mo'od. Lema freya, everything was tov mo'od because they were only created for the purpose of man. According to the Gemara, the Malach, were a pilpul with Hashem. Should we create man? Should we not create man? If Hashem decided not to create man, everything for the first 5 days would have been totally useless. They're only created for the purpose of man. And again, that's the heter that we have to shecht animals and to eat animals because HaKadosh Baruch Hu created them for us. Everything that was created in the first 5 days was dafka created for us. But he says also, Kirkus interesting hara, he says, what's the key tov and tov? Says the word key, it's like a suffix. Maybe it's good, maybe it's not good. Tov mode is badai. This is good, it's great, right? So he says, key tov, it's almost like it's like totally vomi, like maybe it's good, maybe it's not. It's like you have to wait and see to see if it's gonna turn out to be good. Fine. Then the Kliyaker says that meat and fish independently are good. But if you mix them together, they're horrible, right? You never eat a steak on top of your tuna, right? I mean, people do eat tuna steaks, that's true. Whatever. I'm saying you wouldn't eat your meat and fish together. But he says, but those creations, not only is each individual good, but even together they're good, right? It says, Kol asher asavi hinei tov me'od. Again, we'll see this in the shot later on about marriage, right? Later on about lo tov hayos adam levado. But here, he's saying that even though things normally you would never think to have fish and meat together, but the fact that Kosher created multiple creations together is a good thing. It's a positive thing. Then, of course, we have the Yom HaShishi, right? So Rashi goes like, I don't know that. What does that mean? The sixth day of Sivan, right? Matan Torah, and it was the Chamisha Chamsha Torah, the extra hay, right? So, Kosher made it tithe by separations. If the Kosher doesn't accept the Torah, then you're going to go back to Tovavo, which again, as the Kliyaker said before, that it's not really going back. It's really, that's really what it is all along. Now, Kliyaker says that he also says that the word hey, the milu, if you spell it hey as hey olive, which is the way you word hey, is six, megamatria. So he says that's also vav siva, it's also an allusion to that. And the Kliyaker says that the upper and the lower realms are opposites from one another, right? And he says they can only last when there's like a middleman holding them together. Who's the middleman? Man, right? Other, right? In other words, a man who's a little bit physical, who's both physical and spiritual, can hold them together. Now, the remaining spiritual components that are necessary to hold up the Shamayim and the Aretz together depend upon Kabbalah Satorah. The Goyim, who don't have the Torah, are Nimshal Kabahemos, right? They're like animals. And therefore, if we did not accept the Torah, we would also be like animals, which means that the world, by definition, would revert back to Tovavo. I think so. Maybe you ask me, Akashio, what about the 26 generations that were existent before Mount Torah? What right did they have to exist? There was no Torah around. What was the Heter? He says, there were always tzaddikim in the world during Torah. There was, you know, Adam and Noach and Avram. There was always a shame. There was always somebody who was learning Torah. So he says, they had the Shema Gadol, the 26 is Gematria Yurke Vavke. So they had, those 26 generations were almost like dependent on that one Sadik learning and the Shema Hashem holding them up. But once it's not relying on the Yechidi Skula anymore, they needed to either be Mekabel Torah or not, and that will be it. So he says, that's why the Gemara says when a person learns Torah, he makes peace with Pamalia Shalmala, Pamalia Shalmata, because he's literally holding the world together, right? Because otherwise everything's going to crumble and the world won't be able to last. Why was the world created Dafka in 6 days? So the Kliyaker says it alludes to the fact that this world is going to last for 6,000 years. Gemara Rosh Hashanah says this, right? That there's going to be three different periods of the world. The first 2,000 years of the world were Tohu. The middle 2,000 years are Torah. And the final 2,000 years are Mashiach, Ikvus of the Mashiach, right? Whatever you call them. And he quotes Psukim to point in the end. The Kliyaker almost like just Derech Agav, he says, I'm not going to talk about this, but he says, all the Mefarshim write that each day corresponds to 1,000 years, which of course is one of the many ways that people try to get out of the whole, whatever, Darwin and creation theories and other things like that. So they throw in maybe, you know, how do we get to the millions of years? Maybe each day was 1,000 years, was millions of years, you know, whatever. So he just writes like almost in a half a line. He says, I'm not going to talk about it, but he writes like that. Then the Kliyakar says that some say that the reason why there was a hey added to she, it's hashi she, is because the world is created with the letter hey. Rashi writes also, right? Behebraam, right? Behebraam. Rashi quotes Behebraam, that the world is created with the letter hey. And after the Gemar Malacha, Kadosh Baruch Hu, he left his tools on the sixth day, and he didn't want them to be used on Shabbos, so that every professional would learn, don't work on Shabbos, and leave your tools in the sixth day. And the Kliyakar says that the Rashi tables are the words of Yom Hashishi Vayechulu Ayim, are Yud Kei Vav Kei, which is conformed to the idea we mentioned before about the 26 generations before Matan Torah. And he says, according to the Pashm Shad, the Pashm means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu concluded every action of my separation with the name Ka, with Yud Hei, which combines man and woman. The word Sota, Daf Yud Zayin, says that the difference is a Yud and a Hei, right? The letters. If you take out Hashem, you have Ish and Ish, right? If you don't have a HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a marriage, then you have fire. That's what the Gemara says. So he says that that conforms to the idea that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created everything in the world as Zachar Unikeva. Everything in the world has mates, has pairs, right? Everything's created in pairs. So that's what it says, Ki B'Ka Hashem Tzur Olamim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created in Olam Hazeh, this world, in a male female parallel, because every male is the Mashpia and every Nekeva is the Mushpa, right? That's the way it works. And he says that the same, it's not only true on localized, like the Zachar Nekeva level, it's true globally also. He says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was the original Mashpia. So Hashem is the only being in the world that's not Mushpa from Me'achirim, he's only Mashpia. But he says everything else in the world, every other world, he says the Olam HaElyon, the upper world, it brought Shefa to the Olam HaEmtzai, but it was also Mushpa from Hashem. Olam HaEmtzai brought Shefa to the Olam HaTachto, it was also Mushpa from the Olam HaElyon. And the Olam HaTachto, even though it's not, it's Mashpia to the people who live here, there's the literal Zachar Nekeva that live on this world, on Olam HaTachto. So therefore, everything in the world except for Hashem is a Mashpia and a Mushpa. Hashem is only a Mashpia. Right? So, and he says that, he says again, he says the idea also, everyone in this world is either a giver or a taker, right? It's kind of like Rav Dessler's idea from Kunshta Chesed, right? You know, everyone really is, you're either a giver or a taker, you know, even if I give once in a while or I take once in a while, it doesn't necessarily, it's not reflective of what my nature is. So he says, well, everyone in this world is, you have to be givers and takers, and that's why the Gemara says, Ein Ish Ela HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Gemara dashes for Hashem Ish Milchama, or Hashem, so that means HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem is the only being that's categorized as an Ish, because he's only a Mashpia, just like the Zachar is only a Mashpia, and not a Mushpia. But that's why he's called Ish in that case. But then he says, the Kliyakar says, we also find the Lashon of Ish by regular people. He says, yeah, but he calls it like a borrowed term, meaning it's only Lafuke, not it's only Ish in contrast to Isha, right? It doesn't mean fundamentally Hashem is the only being where Ish applies, right? Just we use it as a borrowed term, you know, to contrast to Isha. That's why Kadosh Baruch Hu concludes my separations with Yud Hei, with the shape, with that shape Hashem, which combines Ish and Isha, to show us that everything in Briyas HaOlam was made in that form of Zachar Keva, of Mashpia Mushpa. That's the way that the world was created, and that in this world we don't use the full name of Hashem, we only use Yud, we don't use Yud, okay? But in Olam Haba, a day which is Kulo Shabbos, then we're going to use the full name, right? Yom HaShishi Vayechul HaShem Ezra Hashem Yud Kei Vav Kei, and the passage says, right, Lo Amisim Yahalalu Ka. And that's why the Vav Hei is alluded to in the Russian of Vayechulu HaShemayim. When it's complete, when we have, it's alluded to, you know, Olam Haba, then we're going to have the full Shem HaShem, and Biyom Shekulo Shabbos, we'll have the full Shem HaShem of the Vav Hei added to the Yud that's already here. Pasuk is Asher Baroy Elokim La'asos. So the Kliyaka writes that Shabbos is demonstrates Briyas Olam of Yesh Mayayin, of Ex Nihio, creating something out of nothing, and it's specifically through that Shabbos is created, as opposed to the rest of Briyas Olam, which was Briyas, maybe for the first moment, which is a different discussion, right? But Briyas Yesh Miyesh, right? Everything else, he says, in the world is growing from something. He says, but the truth is that on Shabbos, things are growing too, right? You can't plant on Shabbos, but things are growing on Shabbos. You can't stop the growth of a tree. It's going to continue to grow naturally. So he says that everything that was created during creation was meant to be yesh meyesh. They're like the homer from the things from which they were created. Right? They're like the physicality from which they were created. That's why it says asher bara Elokim la'asos, that Hashem made it for the purposes of creating things, as opposed to Shabbos, which is all about briyas yesh meyayim. Fine. Then the Kliyakar says that which it doesn't say. How come it doesn't say Vayera Vayivokar by Shabbos? So the Kliyakar says that every other day, nighttime is Zman Menucha, and the Boker is Zman Malacha. Shabbos is either all menucha or all malacha. What does it mean, Shabbos, all malacha? It doesn't mean literal malacha. It means it's like malacha of amilus batorah. Either you're learning or you're actually having menucha, right? In other words, he says that Shabbos is all, it's all one or the other. You don't split between malacha and menucha on Shabbos. That's why it doesn't say vayera vayivoker. Pasuk says, Eila todos ha-shamayim va-aretz b'hi bar'am, right? These are, right, so before Rashi, b'hi bar'am, these are the todos of the shamayim va-aretz when they were created. So the Kli Yakar writes, the Chazal says, as we said before, they created the letter Hey, Olam Haba was created with the Yud. So the Kli Yakar points out an idea which Tosos and Psachim develops, that all the shiros of Olam Hazeh are always in Lashon Nekeva, shira chadasha, as opposed to the shir of the final Geula, which is called a shir chadash. Why is that? So the Kli Yakar goes literally right out of Tosos and Psachim. Here's a quote, Tosos, but Tosos is saying, Psalm Kuf Tezayin, that the difference is the reason why shiros of Olam Hazeh are called Nekeva is because even though, let's say, when a woman has a child, there's a great simcha, but there's also tzar lida, there's pains of childbirth that accompany the birth. So every geula that we have in this world, it's a temporary geula. We're happy when it happens, but we know there's going to be pain to follow. As opposed to the final geula, which the Tosu says is kizacharim lo yoldos, right? In other words, there's no pain involved. That's it. It's the final geula, and that's why there's no tzar mentioned in that context. And the pasuk says, "B'yomasos Hashem Elokim Eretz v'Shamayim." So the Kli Yakar says that earlier in the Torah it says "Es Hashemayim ve'Es Haaretz." How come here it's Eretz v'Shamayim? Why is the order flipped? He says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as I said before, initially wanted to create the world with Din, and then he saw it wouldn't last, and that's why he combined it with Racham. So the question is, before the Or HaKadosh said that he really was Meshatev Rachamim, he never changed his Meshach. So the Kli Yakar says, "How can Hashem go back on it?" What does that mean? So he says, in reality, the Shemayim and all the Tzvos HaShemayim, they can last with complete Din. They don't need Racham. They can last with HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Din. It's us. It's this world, the Olam HaTzon, that cannot last like that because we're founded on Afar, and therefore we are, she says, when you're talking about mankind, when we're on this world, so you have to talk about the things that are most closely related to us physically. Afar is where we come from. We're made from Afar. So therefore, we're going to mention Aretz first in relation to creation of us. In relation to creation of the heavens and things like that, we're going to mention Shemayim first because it's closer to Din, right? They can last with Din, whereas we need Rachamim. And based on that, so the Kli Yakar quotes by Pasuk Ketilim, but David HaMelech says, Achaz Dibar Elokim Shtayim Zu Shamati. What does that mean? He says, initially, Achaz Dibar Elokim. There was only supposed to be Din in the world. That was it. It was supposed to be one trait. There was supposed to be Din. Then HaKadosh Baruch Hu incorporated the Midah of Racham, which is the word, it says, Shtayim Zu Shamati. So the word Zu times 2 equals 26, which is Yudke Vavke, right? That's Shem, then he says, that's the Shem Shal Racham. And when you divide it into 2, you get 13, which is Echad, and that's also Ahava, which is included in the name of Racham. And that's why he says that you have Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad ve'ahavta, right? You combine the idea of Ahav and of Echad together. It says the reason why the world was not created only with Din is because Pasuk says Ki Oz Le'Elokim, meaning strength is associated dafka with the shame of Elokim, and none of the lower beings on this world can receive a Kadosh Baruch Hu's strength, but a Kadosh Baruch Hu has Chesed and Rachamim, which is represented by Yud Kei Vav Kei, and Hashem will compensate us for all of the good actions that we do. The Pasuk says Ulecha Hashem Chesed in the second person, we're talking directly to Hashem, and yet by Elokim it says Le'Elokim in the third person to show that, again, in Tzad HaRachamim Hashem is very close to us, but Tzad HaDin, he's far away. Pasuk says, "Vayipach ba'apav nishmas chayim vayhi ha'adam le'afchashem blue." You know, famous Unkelos always goes, right, the ruach memaula, right, the spirit day of Vidibur. So the Kli Yakar says, of course, from Rashi, that even an animal has a nefesh chayim. An animal also has, you know, a life force. It moves around and it lives. But man is the greatest of all because we have day of Vidibur. And he quotes from the Sefer Akedah from Rav Yitzchak Arama. He says that the nishmas chayim is the life force which is inherently present in man. It's a thing that drives. It's like the zitzflesh that we have to, like, you know, to push forward. And he says, according to this, man becomes a nefesh chaya when he adds shlemus to himself, a nefesh ruach neshama. When you complete yourself spiritually, you become like a whole person. However, so that's from Rashi, that's from the Akedah. The Kli Yakar has his own shot. He says that he thinks the nishmas chayim is really the intellectual side of man, what he calls like the sichli ha-nitzchi, like the eternal intellectual side. Meaning what? He says each of us has a chelek halak bima. We have a portion of HaKadosh Baruch Hu within us. And he says even though HaKadosh Baruch Hu blew a spirit of what he calls the nishmas chayim hamisakeles, the intellectual spirit, into us, he says we're still Le Nefesh Chai, right? when a baby is born, so the baby doesn't, you know, can't do quantum physics, and the baby can't think for itself, and the baby can't do anything on its own. But then HaKadosh Baruch Hu blow into us Nishmas Chaim, so how come when we're a day old we can't go ahead, you know, and start doing math problems? The answer is because Hashem gives us the potential to have that. But it doesn't, an animal, the second it's born, it's at it's going to grow physically, it's going to grow bigger, but it's at its full potential in terms of where it's at in its brain, intellectually. We develop intellectually over time. We're born with a lot of potential, we don't always reach that potential, right? I think they say in these studies that we only end up using 10% of our brains in our lifetime, most people. So it's crazy. So Hashem gives us endless amounts of potential for us to use, so we have to use the potential. It's not going to come overnight. You have to work on that potential, but we all have the potential there. And that's why it says by creation of man, it doesn't say Vayara Elokim Ki Tov by man. It says Tov Ma'od later on, but it doesn't say Vayara Elokim Ki Tov, because whether we're Tov or not depends on whether we live up to our potential. Right? We have to live up to it before we can become Tov. Pasuk says the Eitzah Chayim B'Soch HaGan, right? It comes to the Eitzah Das. So the Kli Yakar says, why not HaKadosh Baruch Hu warn Adam not to eat from the Eitzah Das and the Eitzah Chayim together, right? Why didn't he warn them at the same time? He says the reason is because the nature of the Eitzah Chayim is that whoever eats from it is going to live forever, right? But the Eitzah Chayim doesn't have fruit. The Eitzah Chayim, we mentioned this before, has the Tama Eitzah Tama, the bark tastes like the fruit itself. But the Eitz Hadas actually had fruit on it. The Eitz Hadas had delicious looking fruit, whatever it was, grapes, or the wheat, whatever, brachas, so the different shades of what it was. And he says, if you ate from the Eitz Hadas, so Eitz Hadas gave you life forever, but there's no fruit, it's from the bark. The Eitz Hadas allowed you to distinguish between good and evil. So says the Kli Yakar, says before he ate the Eitz Hadas, there was no reason to warn him about not eating from the Eitz Hadas, because couldn't distinguish between good and evil anyway. There was nothing appealing about the Eitz Hadas to eat in the first place, right? In other words, there was no incentive. If you couldn't distinguish, there was no need to warn him about that. He didn't have this. In other words, it was a piece of wood. But Adam before Eitz Hadas was like a regular animal, right? So the fact that Hashem says don't eat from the Eitz Hadas, so that, he's not going to be compelled to go to a bark of wood and eat it. He says most animals don't eat wood. You don't eat just a bark of wood. He says it has something appealing. It has like a fruit. He savahu leinayim. It has to be nechmad lamara. Something that's appealing. But once he ate from the Eitz Hadas and he understood the benefits of the Eitz Hadas that it gave you, let you live forever. Now Hashem says don't eat from the Eitz Hadas. Right? It's a separate meaning. Eretz Yisrael was always in place, but he didn't need to warn Adam originally because it wasn't shaykh before that point. Lo tov heyos adam levado, right? Eslo ezer kinegda, right? It says a man should not be alone. Let him go find a partner. So the Kli Yakar says like this: whenever there's machlokas in the world, so that means by definition there's no goodness. There's a lack of tov in the world. So which is as we said before. That's why it doesn't say kito on the second day, because machlokas was created. And he says that the number two always implies division. There's always, you're separating things, right? You know. He says therefore like this: if each man was created with his own sense of individualized chomer, right? Everyone was separate, right? So then you wouldn't have it wouldn't even make sense in a million years to say, let me take a man and a woman and pair them up and have them get married, right? If man and woman were so different and were so, you know, completely on this different planets from one another, would be shocked. I can't even say this straight face. You would never say, you would tell a man and a dog to get married in some country, whatever. But you it's not even on the radar. It's so ridiculous, right? So if man and woman were so like this, it wouldn't even be a discussion, right? So why does Hashem do this? So Hashem created us in such a way where we need to come together, because man, he says, is lacking love and unity. And he says that mankind, more than any other creature, needs love, right? They need to be cared for. That's what it says, Lo tov heyos ha'adam levado. Meaning, it's not good if man were to be created from one type of chomer and woman from another type of chomer. It wouldn't stim, it wouldn't work. That's why she's an ezer for him, because she helps him out. Because they're made of the same stuff, they're made of the same chomer, so they can help each other out, and they can help focus on each other, and they can grow together. And that fosters a sense of Abba. And Kirk says, you'll tell me, right, that everyone quotes the famous word, Kenegdo, right, Rashi goes, Zacha Ezer, lo Zacha Kenegdo. Kenegdo doesn't mean what everyone says, you know, the word everyone says, she's against you. It's not what it means. He says, what does it say? She visi Hashem lenegdi summit. It means you're against that Kaddish Baruch Hu. It's Kfira. What does Kenegdo mean? He says, it's not what he calls a Hisnagdus Shel Meriva. You're not fighting. It's what he calls a Hisnagdus Shel Ava Kemayim Apanim. It's love. It's not. It's you're not going against your wife. You're going on the same team as her, right? Kenegdo means you're with her. You're together with her. Not you're against her, right? He says, as opposed to a time when people are fighting, they turn their backs away from each other, right? They're punim kenegdo, or if not punim punim, it's like the crew where they're facing each other, right? So that's I really like that shot. Then the other guy's a different shot. He kind of refers back to, you know, to the old shot about what kenegdo means. He says that lo tov means that man is not called good in terms of mitzvos when he's by himself. And he says that when you're alone, there's nothing that's stopping you from doing evil, right? Therefore, Etzel Ezer Kegel means that if your wife is trying to seduce you to do something evil, and you resist and don't listen, so then you're called an Osei Tov, because the Pasuk says in Kohelet, Ein Tzadik Ba'aretz Asher Ya'aseh Tov V'lo Yecheta. There's a possibility of, okay, but you were spared. It's a little bit like a straight shot. It's like, you get a wife, so this way you can ignore what she tries to get you to do Averus. Okay, whatever. Or Chaim is a beautiful shot. He says that the Ezer Kenegdo is the idea that Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us the Torah to help us fight against Yitzchak. He says, and the concept of Vayhior is that the Torah lights up our nefesh. It helps, it assists us in fighting the Yitzchak. He says, however, it's not that the Torah automatically lets you win over the Yitzchak, because then what's the point of Schar V'Onesh, right? That it enables us to continue fighting the battle against the Yitzchak, and it's Mavdu Bein Oru Bein Achoshin, allows us to distinguish what's right from what's wrong. And he says that the Torah says Yom Echad because you need the Yetzer Hara in order to know what's right and what's wrong. Otherwise, it wouldn't be Schar V'Onesh, right? In other words, the Yetzer Hara is we know what's wrong in our heads, so therefore we also understand what's right. It allows us to distinguish between what's proper and what's not. Plus, because Vayisgor Basar Tachtena, that after Hashem created Chava from Adam, took the rib out of Adam and created Chava, he closed up the flesh of Adam. So the Gemara writes that this is the first time in the Torah we find the letter Samach. The letter Samach does not appear anywhere until the creation of Chava. Why? Because the Satan, even it's a sin, but sin and Samach are always interchangeable, was created with Chava, and Samach is also Milashon Smicha. What does that mean? It says because Mitzad, the woman, man needs support to not fall prey to her, to not fall prey to the, you know, to the woman and to the Yetzer Hara. Now he says that the Smicha is also alluded to in the Pasuk of Vayiskor Basar Tachtena, where Hashem closed it off for him so that he wouldn't be Nichshal, meaning HaKadosh Baruch Hu protected him from, you know, from Chava, even though it didn't really work in the end. And then also the pasuk Vayiven Hashem Esat Seilot, Hashem formed, you know, the rib and created Chava. That means that with this relationship, we only need the world to be built up and not destroyed. Like it says the pasuk Vayetze V'Ibaneh Gam Anochim, and Yaakov says, I'll take Bila and I'll build up, you know, the Shvatim from her also, because when Rashi there quotes that whoever has children, it's called Banu, right? You build up the world when you have children. So in that sense, Vayiven Hashem Esat Seilot means that with Chava, he now has the ability to build up the world through having children. The pasuk says, okay, this is a pasuk here. The Nachash says to Chava, right? Oh, didn't Hashem tell you not to eat from any of the fruits? He says, no, we're not eating from the fruits, but don't touch and don't eat from the inside. And that was Chava's downfall because she said, don't touch, and Hashem never said that. Clicker says, I don't get it. Chava knew that Hashem said, don't eat. Why did Chava make up an Isra of Los Sigubo? Hashem never said that. Clicker says like this. Chava never heard the Tzivim directly. Adam heard from Hashem, don't eat. So what did Adam do? Adam said, oh, Adam was a lambda. Adam said, oh, don't eat. So what am I going to do? I'm going to be Gozer Exera, don't touch, I do not to eat. So Adam said, don't touch, because he made the Isra Durabanan, so to speak, don't touch, and don't eat. He just said both, don't touch or eat. So Chava assumed Hashem said both of them. So when the Nachash pushed her against the tree and she saw nothing happen, she said, oh, this whole thing is a sham. The whole thing is wrong. So if the don't touch is wrong, so the don't eat is also wrong. That's what the Gemara Chulin says, called Amos of Goreya, in this context. The Gemara Sanhedrin, right? The Gemara says that if you add on, Chava added on, the problem wasn't that she made a Gzera. Making Gzera is fine. It's if you confuse a Gzera as a Doraisa, that's when all these problems come up, because she thought this was what HaKadosh Baruch Hu actually said, and it's not what he said. Fine. Then the clear girl says that Chava didn't know if the Nachash had good intentions or not. Chava said, well, on the one hand, you know, maybe when the Nachash says, you know, V'yisem ke'elu kim yodei tovara, maybe he really meant it. Maybe you'll really be like God. On the other hand, maybe he just wanted Adam dead to marry Chava, which is what he actually wanted, as the Gemara points out. And since women are dait and kalos, as the Gemara points out, women are dait and kalos, therefore, she would certainly give Adam the fruit first. Rashi, it's very odd. Rashi says that Chava gave the fruit to Adam first, because this way, he would die, and he wouldn't be able to marry anyone else. So it's like Chava knew what she was getting herself into. It's very, very strange. That's why Chava tested the Nachash first by on this tzivu nigiyah. According to this, from the Kliyakar, Chava knew full well that there was no Isra of nigiyah of the tree. But why did she do it? She made it up. Why? Because when it comes to nigiyah, there's no logical reason why Adam should touch the tree before she does, right? Once the Nachash pushed her up against the tree, and she said, I know the Nachash is correct, right? In other words, if the Nachash pushed me up against the tree first, it's clear that he's not trying to marry me, because if it was really usher to touch the tree, I would have been dead already. So Mamela, he must be trying to get me to be like God. It's a good thing. It's beneficial. And that's what she believed the Nachash. That's when she started to eat from the tree. And that's when her whole downfall happened. Yeah. Then the pasuk says, "V'chisa avahula einayim," and she saw that the fruits, you know, looked good. So the Kliyaka writes, with every chid, the Yitzhara has a the Yitzhar Tov and the Yitzhara fight it out. He says the Yitzhar Tov says if you call Yitzhar, right, Yitzhara, so then you'll have Schar Tov for all of my buds, your Ruchnias, whatever. Yitzhara says, no, follow your perceptible type. Look, I can show you the immediate hana you're going to get by eating that or by doing that. So he says it's visible, but the titles of Olam Hazeh, the Pasuk says Ayin Lo Ra, so we have no idea what they are. The Chemda of Olam Haba. That's why it says Vatera Ha'isha, that she saw the Nachash Tain, that she was able to see it visually. She saw exactly what the benefit was. Then the Pasuk says Vatitain Gamli Isha Ima Vayochah. She gave the fruits to Adam also to eat. So the Kli Yakar says that some interpret the, as Rashi said, we mentioned before, that Ima means that she fed it to Adam so that he would also die, not marry somebody else, or so that if she died. The Kli Yakar is a different pshat. The Kli Yakar says that the pshat is, it's not that she fed him the fruit so that this way he would die also. She fed him the fruits when they were having relations. How does he know that? Because it says, before that, he says just what we thought about Shimshon, right? But with Delilah and Shimshon, Delilah got her old secrets out, Davka, Bashas, Tashmish. Because he says at any other time, Adam perhaps would not have listened to her. That's why Adam says, Ha'isha Asher Nasata Imadi. Imadi means at the moment that they were having relations, that's when she, you know, persuaded me, that's when she seduced me. And that which he said, He Nasana Limen Ha'eats. So this is a crazy verse. The Kli Yakar says, what was Adam saying when he said, He Nasana Limen Ha'eats? He was saying, Hashem, you never told me pre Eitz Hadas Lo Sochel. It says, you said, Me Eitz Hadas Lo Sochel. Don't eat from the bark, don't eat from the tree, but you never said don't eat from the fruits of the tree. What does that mean? So I thought the issue was, I'm not allowed to pluck a fruit off the tree and eat it. But maybe the fruit was already plucked from somebody else. Maybe there's no Isra to eat it. So what does he say? He nos nalimina eats. Chava gave me the fruit. So maybe there's no Isra anymore for me to eat it. And that's where obviously he was wrong. Then the Kli Yakar says that some say that since the wife's job is to cook and to prepare the needs of the house, Adam says to Hashem, I assume the food was kosher. What do you want from me? Like, Chava, she's in charge of cooking, so I believe that food was, you know, it was a different fruit. How was I supposed to know? Interesting title. Fine. Plus, it says, mikol mikol chayas, that was the curse of the Nachash. So the Kli Yakar writes, the Nachash is the most cursed of all the animals, because, as Rashi goes, all the other animals get hanel and they attack, but the Nachash, right, ki in yisrol nabal halashon, that's the mashal about Lashon Hara, there's no benefit. And then he says, maybe the mem of mikol habehima, right, mikol chayas asadeh, he says that means that everyone, not that the Nachash is the most cursed, but every animal will curse the Nachash for what it did. Plus, because who yeshuv charosh va'atat yeshuv fenu akiv, right? That was part of the Nachash's curse, that you're, you know, there's going to be a constant struggle between you and man about, you know, they're going to try to kill you or try to kill them. So the Kli Yakar is the most of the first one, right, that the Yetzer Hara draws its cock from the Nachash. Right? The Nachash is always associated with the Yetzer Hara, and he says that the Yetzer Hara is at first it's like a spider web. It's very thin. It's almost imperceptible. Right? The Gemara makes this Hara that the first Yetzer to tell you, you know, just do this, you know, very light, very, you know, almost non-existent Yetzer, and then eventually when it gets you, it's going to become, like, he says, like these avusos ha'agala, these really heavy ropes that are like you're stuck, you can't move anywhere. So he says if you're a Zaris to fight your Torah at the very beginning, you know, when it's a little tiny nothing, then it's very easy to overcome. Then who yishuv charosh, then you're gonna overcome it easily. But he says, but if you let the Yitzhar enter and let it get in a little bit and it starts to penetrate and you follow it, you know, a little bit day by day, and eventually it's going to overtake you to the degree, right, that you're going to va'atat teshuvenu, okay, it's going to trample on, it's going to trample over you, right? The Gemara says people don't just go worship Avodah Zarah out of nowhere. It starts out, you know, imperceptible, little Yitzhar, then eventually it builds up to something much more serious. And he says, he gives us mashal, a beautiful mashal for tshuva. And when a person does tshuva when they're young, when they're a kid, in the beginning of their days, you know, it's much easier for a person to change their ways when they're young. A person 90 and he's been doing the same thing for the last, you know, 90 years, it's very difficult to change his ways because certain things that are kind of ingrained in him, you know, to be a certain way. And he says the same is true for Avirus Chamuros. You know, if a guy is a serial killer and killed for 50 years, you know, the only way to stop him is to kill him. Right? You're not going to change his ways just because, you tell him, don't do that. But he says that it's almost more dangerous, right? That's Rashi in the beginning of Ikev, of course, right? Mitzvah Sha'adam Dash Ba'akeva. The things that are light and that are imperceptible are almost more dangerous because you don't realize that you're doing Averos. You don't think you're doing an Avero, and then eventually it builds up and you realize, you know, it almost takes you. It gives a mushroom. It's like snake poison. It's like it bubbles up. First you don't feel it, and then eventually, you know, it comes up and it kills you. He says that's what the pasuk means. In Eicha, it says, Tuma Savishuleha Lo Zachara Harisa. It says that the tumah is bishuleha. It's almost like it's on the side. It's almost like you don't realize it. And because what is lo zachra acharisa means you don't think about the consequences. You think about the end. The tumah, it's whatever. It's nothing. You don't realize that at the end it's going to build up. It's going to be something much more serious. Right, that was Adam's curse that you're going to have to sweat, you know, to make your food. The Kli Yekar writes that there's an allusion here to the words of the doctors. The doctors say that before a person eats, he should engage in some kind of a strenuous physical labor that overheats you, that, you know, he should sweat a little bit, because that it's going to help him digest food properly, apparently. That's what the doctors claim. It says, based on the pasuk of Yegia Kapecha Ki Sochel Ashrecha V'Tovlach. Right? When you Yegia Kapecha, when you sweat, when you put in a lot of amilas, then Ki Sochel, then it'll be good for you. He says, that's what we eat Savon Tochleta Koye Mechayecha. The word itzavon is a lashon of malacha, right? Like it says, Yodecha itzavuni v'yasuni. The pasuk says in Iyov. It says that you're gonna sweat, you're gonna work for your ma'isa yodea, and kol yimechayecha means that you should only eat kedechaya, you know, just enough to get by, right? In other words, the idea of like eat to live and not live to eat, right? In other words, just eat enough. And he says, don't, you know, kedushin to you, don't overeat, don't do things that are, you know, not necessary for your basic survival. Pasuk says Chava, ki he, she was called, Adam called her Chava, ki hi ha-yasa im kochayas. So the Kli Yekar all before she asked question, if that's true, call her Chaya, not Chava, right? So the Kli Yekar says, really she was called Chaya, kodem achid, but after she sinned, she was called Chava. Why? Because word Chava is related to the Aramaic Chivya, which means snake. So he says, her name wasn't changed entirely because they still wanted to keep the idea of im kochay, but she was called Chava, but that extra vav was added. Pasuk says, La avoda sa adama asher lukach misham. So, right, that Adam was now taken to work the land that he was taken from Gan Eden. The Kli Yekar writes that lukach misham is an allusion to the Mizbach Adama. We know that in Parshas Yisra, and the Yisra, Mizbach Adama Tassili, mankind is created from the Adama, and that's when we come back to the Mizbach, where we get our kapara from. That's the book of kapara, which is Haram Uriah. So Hashem sent Adam to work the land to build a Mizbach, to offer karbanos, to get kapara, all these different things he sent Adam to do. And since the Adama, as we said before, is the Chomer Gava As, it's a very heavy, very thick type of chumrius, of gashmias, and it's also the source of all chait. So in the very place where the chait was caused initially is the place that will affect kapara. As mentioned before, the land is what caused the chait. The land, by not listening to Hashem, by creating this very chomer, this type of chomer avegas, caused us to sin as well. And he says that's also why the Gemara says in Chulin that the carbon that Adam Harishon offered was a shor par makrin mefres passing into Tehillim. It says that Adam's par that he offered had like a single horn in the middle of its head. And again, we'll see, get back to that point in a second. It says that even according to the Pshat, that, like Rashi says, not that it was the earth from under the Mizbech, but it was the earth from all over the world that Adam gathered, it means that the place about which it says Mizbach Adama Tassili, the place where the Evan Shasiya, you know, the foundational stone of the world is created, the whole world was founded from, and the offer, he says, the offer taken from the center of the world is like gathering from the whole world, right? He gives the mashal, like when it says, by Yaakov in Parshas Vayetze, Ha'aretz Asher Atash Shochev Aleha L'chayat Enenu Ul Zarecha, so it doesn't mean, Rashi says, the Gemara Chuzi, Hashem folded up the earth for Yaakov to get the Har Moriah. It doesn't mean he folded up, it means he was sitting in the middle of the earth, it was like the earth was folded up underneath it. Fine. Oh, this is a gishmak. So this is the story of Kayin Hevel. The Kli Yekar is a beautiful mahalach on the story of Kayin Hevel. So the Kli Yekar says like this. We know that Kain and Hevel each had a mile in terms of the carbon they offered. Kain's mile was that he offered the carbon first. Hevel's mile was that his carbon was better quality than Kain's was. So the Kli Yekar says that in reality, Kain and Hevel were having a very fundamental machlokes regarding Ikari Hadas, regarding like basic principles of Emunah. So Kain denied the idea of Tchias Amisim, of Olam Haba, maybe even about Kadosh Baruch Hu, Rashi writes, he's going to Das El Yonah, he's trying to trick Hashem when he says, you know, Hashomer Achi Anochi, right? He says, you know, right? So Kain didn't feel like such a great guy. Hevel believed in Olam Haba and Tchias Amisim, especially. He believed in those kinds of things. He believed in that the initial the Shlemus was not only in this world. Kain, because he only believed in this world, he was an Ohev Adama. He was very into Karka. Why? Because Karka is stationary. It doesn't move anywhere. It's this world. It's all about building up this world. Hevel had Metaltalin. He had sheep, right? So he was all about building up, you know, for, looking at the future, things that he could take with him. And he says also, of course, that was the you know, shepherding was, of course, the profession of Moshe and David and many other Nevi'im, because it allowed for his hispoderos and that kind of idea also. He says, the Kli Yekar says also, that the machlokas Yaakov and Esav, right, is reflective of that idea also. He says, v'yado ochezes ba'akev Esav, that Yaakov was grabbing at the akev, to the end, to the tachlis, to olam haba, to an idea of the future, and not just in this immediate world. Now, the Kli Yekar points out also, he says, again, like we said before, that the difference between karka versus metaltalin, He says also there's another chiluk. He says that when a person buys karka, so he says you can't pick up karka, right? Karka is wherever it is. So if I buy land in China, I can't bring the land here. It's in China. So what does it mean? I go to China, I buy a piece of land, and I come back to America. So I can't benefit from the land. It's just sitting there, right? So he says, I'm a calculate, I can just take it with me. I can use it for whatever I want, wherever I want. So he says that he leaves the wealth, when it comes to karka, any wealth that you get, if I improve the land, I plant on the land, let's say it bears fruit, but I go away for 20 years, so I don't see the fruit. So that fruit is not, I can't benefit from it. Other people can benefit from it. So he says, a person who makes this world the ikker, right, he's leaving all of his, all the nachas, all the benefit that he gets, basically in this world, he's not taking it with him for the future. Whereas the metallic hevel, he's using that for the future. He gives the mashal also, like a person who's a guest who's passing overnight in a hotel, he's staying in to spend the night. He doesn't think to take anything with him, right? He's kind of traveling. So he says that was the mindset of Kayin. He says all of the colleagues of Kayin, who are those people who love money and who love, you know, the havle hasman, the kinyani hasman, the temporary possessions that, you know, that drive them only for this world. His hevel demonstrated the vanity of kinyani hasman, how things in this world are all temporary and they don't mean anything. That's what he davka opted for metalklin, for things that you can take with you, so to speak, which is a fulfillment of the idea that man can take something from where he is and move it around and take it with him for the future. Now, the Kli Yakar says also a little bit of Charifus, he says that it's known that those people who love money will never use their wealth for mitzvah or for tzedakah, right? They're going to hoard the money for themselves, and they're going to have the excuse that we have plenty of time left to live, and we want to enjoy our money, we want to eat and drink, we want to do all sorts of personal benefits. We don't want to give our money to anyone else, and as long as they're healthy and as long as they're doing well, they're not going to think twice about using their money. But the second they get older and they get closer to death, then they're going to be like, wow, we should probably do something, right? We should probably like get tzedakah, we should probably whatever it is. So the Kliyakar says, hang on, he says, Kayin, we said before, denied maybe even Hashem, but certainly Olam Haba. Why does he bring a carbon for it? He denies the basis of the faith, but he's firm enough to bring a carbon. What does that mean? He says, Kayin was falling into this trap. Kayin didn't really deny everything. Kayin knew in the back of his head there was an Olam Haba. But Kayin lived his life as Hevle Hazman for the first however many years. Eventually he woke up and he's like, I'm gonna die soon. I have to change my way. Let me bring a carbon. Let me do something, very magnanimous. Let me bring a carbon. And the Kli Yakar quotes his Gemara in Chagiga, which he quoted. He refers to when he says in Vayelech. We quoted this in Parshas Vayelech also. When the Gemara darshan psukim that says that it's a bad thing. When the pasuk says in Vayelech, Vayakisim Sena Osom Raos Rabos Vitzaros. So the Gemara in Chagiga darshan that refers to Hamal Velo Ani B'Shas Dachot. It's not a good thing to lend money to an ani when he really needs it. Kli Yakar says it doesn't mean when the ani needs money. Is when you are in desperate need of a mitzvah, you decide for the first 50 years of my life I'm not going to give lend money. I realize I'm about to die. Let me lend money now. That's not a good thing. Hashem doesn't like that. Hashem doesn't want you to do mitzvahs when you realize that your time is up. He wants you to do it beforehand. And says even when you do give the money, eventually it's not even the same about mitzvah. You do it because you're for yourself. It's all self centered anyway. And kind of gave the lowest quality possible. He gave the Zera Pishtar. He didn't give anything that was of good quality anyway. Fine. And he says that's why it says by Kayin, Vayihimi Kates Yamim. It was the end of his life. It's when he eventually woke up and said, let me do something now. Let me bring a carbon. Let me do something, a gesture, something, so that this way, he thought he would be salvaging something, when in reality it wasn't to be. Then the Kli Yakar quotes in the Medrash Hanelah, which is probably the Zohar, says that Kayin was Misitra Bisha, what we call Sitra Achra. He came from, the Kabbal, the left is always the Sitra Achra, is the evil, and the right is always is considered good. So he said that's why the passage says Miketz Yamim and not Miketz Yamin, because he came from the left side. Yamin, right? We say in Yigdal Shlach Miketz Hayamin Mishichen. Yamin doesn't mean the right; it means the days. It's like another. In Tanakh sometimes you swap Yamin for Yamin. So he says, but there Dafka doesn't say it by Kayin because he didn't come from that angle, from that perspective. Then the Kliyakar gives a wild idea. The Medrash says he gives a mushel to the story of Kayin and Hevel. He says a mushel to Kayin is let's say a man has ripe fruits, he eats the ripe fruits for himself, and he sends the unripe fruits to the king. In other words, what is that? What's the nimshal? He says, in his youth, in his early days, where he has the status of a bechor, when he's high in himself, so he consumed all of his money, all of his possessions, he used it to the fullest of his ability, and he sent what he calls the sayafos, which are unripe fruits, but sayafos from the word sof. The end of his days, when he eventually woke up and said, "I'm about to die," I'll give a karban. Now I'll do something like that. So he quotes from the Tzurah HaMor from the Ram. He quotes that he says that the word karban are the sofi. He says the karban or the sofi tables are the word pishtan. If we use a milu, if you spell the letters a little bit complicated how he says that, but whatever. And then he quotes also that the bakuros are the the ripe fruits. And the Medrash are Rosh Tevis of Karban. In other words, if you use the Chilek HaMukhar, the best portion, as a Karban, but the Sofei Tevis are Pishah, at the end of your life, the Sofei Tevis, that's only the you know, the cheap stuff. But Hevel, what did Hevel give? Mibichoros Tzono Mechel Ve'en. He gave the best. He gave the best quality of a sheep. Not because Hevel thought about the end of his days, but he brought it because he believed in Olam Haba. He believed in the future. He believed that there was going to be a greater Tachlis that he was going to gain by giving, you know, by giving up some of his benefits in this world. And he says, just like a person who goes on a long journey, he doesn't really care about the food he himself eats, right? If a person, let's say, is on a long journey and he finds a great piece of food, he's going to back to his family. He's not going to eat it himself. He's going to give it back to his family, where, you know, where his real home is, not and not keep hoarding for himself on the road. He says, that's why Hashem Davka turned to Hevel's carbon, not to Cain's carbon, because his intentions were good, but and, as opposed to Cain, who was bad. And that's what we've said before, beginning Seder Vayikra, Adam Kiyakrim, become carbon la Hashem. If you want to offer a carbon that will be accepted by Hashem, you have to be like Hevel, right? You have to offer like Hevel did to bring from the best of your possessions. The pasuk says, "And vayikra min habehimah, min habakaru, min atzon." You have to bring from mibuchoro sora, from the best of your animals, the best of your sheep. And that's why it's takrivu as karbanchem, to bring your animal, the thing that you would want to bring the most delicious animal. Bring that one dafka, because that's the best portion, and that's what you should offer up as a karban. The pasuk says, "Vehevel hevi gamhu." Right. So what does gamhu mean? So the kliyakar quotes in the mafreshim here also that Hevel was a little bit at fault here, as mentioned before, because he did bring the karban first. He only brought it because he saw Kayin bring it. Now, he says, that's what he says, Gamu, like he was, you know, kind of like thrown in the mix. He also brought it because of Kain. Now, he says he was also jealous of Kain. And he says, it was a beautiful idea. Pasuk in Kohelet says, V'ra'isi ani es kol amol, ve'es kol kishron ha-ma'aseh, ki hu kin'as ish me'rehehu, gam zeh havel. He says, everything that a person does is all competition, it's all fighting, it's jealousy, and that's also havel. But he says, ki gam ze hovel, gam hevel hevi gamu, that's what hevel is. Hevel opened the carbon because of gam, because he also saw Kayin bring it. It was all competition, it was all because he was jealous of what Kayin did. What does the pasuk say? Vayhi bi yosam basadeh, vayakam Kayin al hevel achiv vayahar geyu. He gets him and he kills Hevel. Why does it mention that? And they were in the field. Who cares if they were in the field? What does that mean? She says, it mentions Sadeh because there was a fight with them regarding carbonos. Each one showed the chisor of the other carbon, the other one's carbon. Hevel said, Kain, oh look, you brought the cheapie, you know, the Zarapishta. Kain said, Hevel, yeah, but you only brought it because I brought it first. He says, imagine, he says to Hevel, imagine that there was no one else around. Imagine you were in the Sadeh by yourself. Right? You're not in the ear. There are other people around. You ever think to bring a carbon on your own. Because he invoked the concept of Sadeh, he realized that Hevel, we thought that Hevel was at fault somehow, because he says, you don't have the initiative to do it. You only do it because I, you're only playing copycat that I brought the carbon, initially. Therefore, he says, that will help you when you're amongst the people. But when you're in the Sadeh, when you're alone, it's not going to help you. You don't have anything good to do because you have no one good to learn from. And therefore, Kain said, it's not fitting that you should be in this world. You don't deserve to be here. I'm going to kill you for that, because you don't deserve to be here, because you don't know how to do good on your own, because Hashem doesn't desire fools and doesn't desire things that are vain, right? And things that are done out of jealousy they're only done out of competition. He doesn't look nice about a card button. It's not a bad thing, but he did it out of jealousy. That's why, in that regard, he thought he beat out Hevel, and then he killed him. And that was the response that he gave to him based on the Sada, based on the concept that when you're Besada, you have no one to learn from. And that's what the Gemara means when it says that Adam's carbon, we said before, Mishor Par Makrin Mafris, that Adam's carbon had a horn in the middle of its head. What does that mean? Adam was a Yachid Ba'olam. He was Keranach. He was the only one in the world. That's why he didn't see the Adam didn't learn from anyone. Adam just did. He just brought a carbon. Right? Adam was the first person in the world, so he was the president center about bringing carbonos. So he was arousing himself to do it. That's why his carbon was accepted. That's why it says Adam ki yakar became carbon la Hashem. This is not the part about Gzela, but when you're like Adam Arishon, meaning when you are aroused to make a carbon on your own accord, you don't look at other people. You just say, "I'm going to do it." The inspiration comes directly from you. That's a carbon la Hashem. That's not a carbon that was brought out of a state of kinah. The pasuk says when Kain gets upset that Hashem only turns to Hevel's carbon, not to his own carbon. So Hashem says, "What do you say to that?" Right? So he says. Imtativ says, "Im lo sitiv la pesach hatas rovitz ve'elecha teshuka." So, what does that mean? La pesach hatas rovitz. So, the Kliyaka writes that we see from here an idea that a riot that they did the Chazal develop that Rishayim don't do tshuva afilu al pischa shel Ganem. They're literally about to fall into the pits of Ganem. They still don't do tshuva because the entrance to Ganem is called pesach hatas. Like it says here, pesach hatas rovitz, because it's the opening and it's the source for sin and for banishment. Right? That's where all those punishments are meted out. And he says, even when a person is literally crouching by the entrance of Gehenna, Ve'elecha teshuka. So he's got all his taivas and his desires, and his yitzhar still overpowers him. That's one shot. Then he quotes another shot, the Gemara in Tainis and Brachos. La'olam yargiz adam yeshatov yitzharah. The Gemara says that a person should always, literally means to anger, but it means that he should always overpower his yitzharah. And then if it goes away, then fine. If not, the Gemara says, remember Yom HaMisa. Think about the Yom HaMisa, then for sure it's going to go away. That's what it means. Im teitiv. If you're successful at driving away the yitzharah, then seis. Then HaKadosh Baruch Hu will show you favor, right? Like the word yisa, right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu will show you favor, he'll accept your tshuva. But if not, then la pesach hatosh, which think about the entrance to the grave, think about death. That will deter you from ever sinning. And he says, and then the result will be v'atad timshol, you'll be able to conquer. Look like there's a beautiful idea, a really beautiful mashal. He says that Chazal compared the Yitzhar to a fly. Gemara in Brachos Samach Aleph compares the Yitzhar to a fly. The Gemara says it's like straddling the two fences of your heart. And the pasuk in Kohelet says, speaking of the 10th parak, Zavuve maves yavish yabia shemen rokech. The flies of death foul up the sweet smelling oil. So why is Yitzhar compared to a fly? He says, a fly, the mouth of a fly is very weak. A fly doesn't really have koach to do anything. The only time a fly can do anything is when, in other words, if my skin is healthy, the fly can't penetrate. But if the second there's a little wound on the skin, the fly just goes in and that's it. And it exacerbates the wound. It gets worse and worse. It says, when you have a tzaddik, a person who's free of chet, and he closes the door on the Yitzhar, doesn't let it in at all, Yitzhar can't do anything. It's weak. So once you have a little tiny pesach, a little opening, you're finished. The Yitzhar's going to get in. It's going to destroy you. That's what the Gemara says in Shabbos. Habala tame poschen lo, or according to one gear, psachim lo. In other words, their entrances, you're opening the door for the Yitzhar effectively when you sit. It finds room to enter. Then the clear quotes in the Yalkut Shimoni Mishalach that Amalek is compared to a fly also, because just like Amalek, they go after the blood of Christ, so they cannot harm us as long as we're following the Ratzon HaBoreh. But the Pasuk says right before Amalek, it says we were in Refidim, right? What does Chazal say Refidim means? Sharafu Yideya Min HaTorah. We weren't learning, we weren't Osi B'Torah. That's why they were able to attack us. That's why it says La Pesach Hatas Rovetz, because the Yitzhara is called Achatas in a situation when there's an opening present for, you know, when there's an opening for us to sin, it's going to jump right in, it's going to attack. And its desire is to subvert you from the ways of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But as long as it's still in the beginning stages, it hasn't conquered you really yet, then you're able to subdue. But if it's already penetrated you, then it's almost impossible to get rid of it. Then Hashem says to Kayin, Kayin says to Hev, Vayomer Kayin Lehev Lachiv, and it says, Vahibi Yosam Asnavim Kayin Lehev Lachiv Vayahargeu. It doesn't say what Kayin says. Vayomer Kayin Lehev Lachiv, it says, when they were in the field, Kayin killed Hevel. So what does the word Vayomer mean? Hiker says, Vayomer doesn't mean to say. It says that the word Vayomer is like, say in the Yom on Wednesday, in Tehillim, it says, Yisamru Kol Paul Yavin. Or like it says, or as Hashem Ha'amarte Yabarsh Kisavo. It's a lot of Hisparus to glorify. Vayomer Kayin glorified himself over his brother Hevel by saying, the world is mine. Everything you're standing on belongs to me. And he killed Hevel for trespassing what he believed to be his property. This is my world. Now, according to the earlier shot, the Kayin accused Hevel of not being good on his own account, right? Because he had no one to learn from. He wasn't inspired. Kayin himself had to provide the inspiration. So he says, only because he saw that Kayin offer the carbon first. So that's what Vayomer means. He was glorifying himself mitzad that, you know, that I'm the one who got you to bring the carbon in the first place. Now, what does Hashem say? The famous verse, Vayomer Hashem Kayin, Ehevel Achicha. And he says, Vayomer Lo Yadati, Hashomer Achi Anochi, right? Klieger says, how could Kayin say with a straight face, Lo Yadati? If he didn't think HaKadosh Baruch Hu existed or know what he was doing, so this is the question we asked before. What's been the carbon for? Right? He clearly, somewhat believed him. So he says, Kayin clearly understood that he was being taken to task for killing Hevel. He understood that. He wasn't an idiot. To which he responds, Lo yadati Hashem Rachi Anochi. It's not a question. It's not a bit me, like Rashi says. You think I'm my brother's keeper? It's a statement. He says, Lo yadati Hashem Rachi Anochi. I had no idea. I didn't realize that there's an Isser to murder. I had no idea. To which Hashem says, are you stupid? Are you crazy? Murder is one of the mitzvah sichlios, right? He says, of course there's an isser to murder. How could you have not known that there's an isser to murder? That's why Hashem says, Kol demei achicha tzolakim elayim in ha'adamah. Because this is a mitzvah sichli. Of course you have to keep this mitzvah. Even though, yes, I never commanded you formally, Losirtzach, which Hashem does later, but of course you have to keep it. He says, because if you don't, the mission of course, the pasuk from Chavakuk, Ishas reyehu chayim baleyu. If I'm allowed to murder people, the whole society falls apart, right? I can just kill whoever I want. So he says, what would happen as a result if you could murder whoever you wanted? The earth would remain desolate. No one would be here. The whole world would be dead. He says that the land demands the shame of the murder victim. It almost says, you killed this person, I'm going to take you to task for that. Because the whole existence of the land depends upon people living. If there was permission to kill, the land wouldn't last. Lo sosif ta'adam, right, tes kocha od. The land wouldn't produce anymore. Now, just like the Adam is affected by someone's murder, and it demands justice, the Adama itself it pays did to the murderer, because the pasuk says in Parshas. It says that the land flatters, the blood flatters the land. What does that mean? So the Kli Yakar says that the land's mouth is just always open to swallowing whatever, if the blood drips, it's going to soak into the earth. So he says, when you put someone in someone's mouth, you spoon feed him almost, it's like you're flattering him, it's like you're bribing him, it's like you're giving him something extra. He says that referring to the people who murders innocent people, because with that blood, you're kilu flattering the earth. The earth flatters you by giving forth fruit to people who don't really deserve it. And he says that, and he says, not only does it give forth, produce, but also it allows you to dwell on the land. We don't really deserve to dwell on the land either. And that's why future generations, the only way to atone for it is with the blood of the murderer, right? And he says, that's why, so the people shouldn't say that the land is flattering the murderer. He says, but for the sake, so the question is, how come Cain wasn't killed? How come if Cain murdered Hevel, and there needed to be kaparim to the land, so Cain should be killed, because Cain couldn't be, because otherwise there literally would be no one in the world. There wouldn't be Yeshiva Olam anymore. So he says, he needed to be around just mitzad that. And the land fulfilled the promise, but in two ways. Number one, lo sosif teis kocha lach. It wouldn't produce fruit because of what Kai did. And also, Kai was navana tia ba'aretz. He couldn't just settle on the land, right? Those are the two things the land provides. The produce and also a place to settle. Kai had neither of those because of his sin. He wasn't killed because he needed to populate the world. But he was punished in terms of the actions that he did. The pasuk says, "Vayosem Hashem l'kayin os levotia kos so kol motzo." Hashem put an os on Kayin's head that no one who finds him should kill him. The good guy says, "It's a beautiful idea." He says that. First of all, Chazal argue about what the nature of the os is. He quotes from a medrash that Hashem shone the sun over him. So what does that mean? He says the Rishonim are compared to Choshech. So what does that mean that the sun was shining over him? So he gives a beautiful idea. He says, we know from Parshas Mishpatim the idea of Baba Machteres. Pasuk says, Imba Machteres, Imba Tzeh Agarav, Yuhukav Amiz, Inlo Damim, but Im Zorcha Hashem Eshalav Damim Lo. What is it? So it's clearly an expression. Zorcha Hashem Eshter means that if it's clear, the Rishonim Gemara quotes, if it's clear as day to you that the person who's breaking in is not trying to kill you, then he has blood and you're not allowed to kill him. So Kain was a Ganav, right? He was Goniv Dasol, he was trying to fool HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He was like someone who was tunneling. He was trying to run away from Hashem, right? Because Hashem turned his face away from him and he exiled him throughout the world. So Cain was afraid and he sent him into Chutzlaretz. And the Gemara says in Ksubas, right? Domet Shemil Shein Lo Aloach. If you're living in Chutzlaretz, like you don't have a God. So he says, he's running around from place to place. And he says, anyone who's running around, he's like, Bab Machteres. So the din is Ein Lo Damim. Anyone who finds him can kill him. So what was the simon that Hashem did? Zorcha Olav Hashemish. He says, no, I'm going to put the sun over you. And now you're going to have Damim Lo. Anyone who tries to kill you, they're going to be punished. And in fact, that's what happened. Rabbi Lemech, right, accidentally, killed when Tuval Kain killed him, so Lemech right, eventually get when Tuval Kain told Lemech right to kill Kain, the parsha told him to kill Kain, so eventually he was punished for that as a result. Now why does the pasuk right, and he explains also what the pasuk says, v'hayochol motzi argeni, says of course only someone who finds me will kill me. What was Pasuk going to say? And anyone who doesn't find me, it's of course it's Kol Motzi, whoever finds me. He says, Kol Motzi is me Lashon, im Mamatar Yimatzei Haganav. You're right? It's that same Lashon. When the person finds me tunneling around, he's going to kill me. Pasuk says, Vayesha Be'eretz Nod Kit Masina, that he was exiled to the east, right? He was exiled out of Gan Eden. So the Kli Yakar is that anyone, whoever's exiled, is always exiled to the east. By Adam Arishon, right? He caused Misa to all future generations. It says, Vayashkei Mikedem LeGan Eden, right? That's right. Was settled to the east of Gan Eden by the Ir Miklat, and the Eschanan, the Torah says, Be'ever Hayardin Mizracha Shamash, also to the east. Because whoever murders brings closer the sunset of the victim, right? He brings the Shemesh of the victim to a close, and the Pasuk says in Koheles, Ad Asher Lo Sechshach HaShemesh, and therefore they're exiled to, he says, to the end of the world, basically. So that's why it says by Haley Warren, it says in Baba Basra, by Herod, right? By Hordas, Herod was, he murdered thousands of Jews and Rabbanim, he extinguished the light of the world. And he says, a fascinating mashal, says by a Baal Tshuva, how does a Baal Tshuva get to becoming to a state where he's able to do Torah mitzvos? He has to go swing from one extreme to another, right? A Baal Tshuva is a person who starts out, a guy he's not from, and he's eating treif, and almost become from, and all of a sudden he has to go cold turkey. He can't eat anything anymore, right? Pun intended. He can't eat anything anymore. So what are you supposed to do? He says, the only way for a Baal Tshuva to become a Baal Tshuva is to literally become extreme. Now, it's a little bit weird. Not literally become extreme. It means to go to an opposite extreme. In other words, right? The Kli Yakar gives this mashal. I forget where he gives this mashal, somewhere else. About if you have a piece of wood that's bent and you want to straighten it out, the only way to straighten the wood is to bend it all the way to the other side, right? It's like the swinging pendulum kind of thing. It's like to get to the middle, you have to all the way to the other side. So it's that kind of idea. Also, you have to do a mitzvah, which is the extreme opposite of the aver that you did before. Look, there's a beautiful idea. Pasuk says, when it describes Kayin, it says, "Vayihi boneir vayikra shem yir kishem enochanoch." Why does it say boneir in present tense? What do you mean he was building cities? It's just that vayiven here, he built the city. The Kliyakar says that the lashon of boneir here means that it's like we said before by Kayin. Kayin is like, it's the paradigm of people who love money and who love kinyan olam hazeh. So when a person builds, when a person is so steeped in this world, he keeps on building, he keeps on amassing wealth, he doesn't think twice, he just does, he just keeps on doing. And he's never satisfied with whatever he has. He's going to be a boneir, he's always going to be building, he's always going to be trying to do more. And he also says that's why the letters in the Aleph Beis Ani are next to Kesef, because the two are go hand in hand. So if you take the letters of, flip it around a little bit, they're next to the Aleph Beis, because if you love money, you're an Ani Bedaito. You're constantly thinking about the money, you don't think about anything else. Then he says also, that's the idea when it says, Bonei Yerushalayim Hashem, in the present tense, the Gemara in Baba Basra says that when the Malachi Asheri saw these precious stones, that they saw that Hashem were using them to build up Yerushalayim, Hashem is constantly building up Yerushalayim actively. He's Bonei, right? We say Bonei Yerushalayim in the present tense. So Kayin also was constantly building himself. The Pasuk says in Koheles, Ish Asher Yiteloha Elokim Osher Unchasim, Velo Yeshlenu Elokim Lachomi Menu. The word Yitain, Ish Asher Yiteloha Elokim, is in the future tense. It should have said Nasan, but Yitain means that he will never be status with the money that Hashem gives him. He'll always be trying to constantly amass wealth. Pasuk says that Lemech married two wives, Ada and Silah. Right? He marries Ada and Silah. Rashi already points out that Ada was the wife who was taken to have children, Davka, and that's Ada in Aramaic is the word it means to turn away. The clerical also the word Adias means to become pregnant. She was Davka used for Puruvut. Silah was Betilo Tamid, that she was Davka for Tashmish. She wasn't used to have children, otherwise she ended up having a child anyway at the end. The Kliyakar says that when you marry a woman for children, for Puru Revu, for the purpose of going to the mitzvah, so then you usually have better children. When you marry a woman, stop for Tashmish, for pleasure purposes, so then your children are not necessarily as good. That's why, so we know that, first of all, Rashi says that that Lamech was supposed to give up Ikrin, like a sterilizing potion to Tzila, so she wouldn't have children, but it didn't work, because she had a kid, obviously. So he says that Ada had Yaval and Yuval, right? Yaval was the first shepherd, and Yuval was the first musician. So what was the big deal about that? So he says, we know shepherds, we mentioned before already, Spodidus and the idea of solitude, and those are the Nevi and Moshe, David were all shepherds. And music, he says, is the way that we praise Hashem. Halu, Benevel, Vichinor, is the way in which we praise Hashem. And that's how the Shekhinah Shor, by Elisha, by Yikin, again. So those are all very praiseworthy things. He says, as opposed, essentially, because Rashi, Wamsha quotes that they were Dafkis for Avodah Zarah, but I guess in the conventional way. As opposed to Tzila, who was not meant for having children, so her kid was Tuval Kayin. Tuval Kayin was the one who made weapons. As Rashi says, he perfected the craft of Kayin. He was able to, it was easier to murder now, right? He perfected what Kayin did. So obviously that was Makatsur Yama Shaladam. That's when he created things that shortened people's lives. And he says maybe it was Mida Kedegan Mida, because the more times a person has Bia, it's also Makatsur Yama Shaladam, apparently. So he says that Ro Bios they had with Tzila, because she was Davka meant for Tashmish, that's what caused that. And he says at the end, this teaches us a fundamental principle in marriage. He says, so when you marry a woman, Dav just for beauty or just for external purposes, it doesn't translate well for you. The Gemara's Nida and Tzuba talk about this, about different, if a person marries a woman for this or for that or for that or for that, or whatever, so it doesn't necessarily end well in terms of the kids. Pasuk says, Zeh Sefer Toldos Adam. So the Kliyakar quotes from the Ramban, that's referring to the entire Torah, it's called Toldos Adam. It quotes from Rabbeinu Bachai, that Sefer refers to Chachma. That's the Iker Toldos Adam is Chachma. And the Kliyakar says that he thinks that the Sefer refers to the concept of on the day on which we were created, so we were whole in our creation. That the Gemara says in Nida that when the Malach comes and brings the Tipat Hashem, so Hashem says a Gibor or Chalash, Tipesh or Chacham, Asher or Ani, but a Tzadik for Rasha lo Kamer, because that's what the Gemara says. Hakovi de Shemaim Chutzmir or Shemaim. So he quotes from Pesukim and Tehillim to prove this idea also. But the one thing that was left up to us to do is to determine our Shlemus in terms of whether we're a Tzadik or Rasha, whether we listen to Hashem or not, in terms of our setting and our background, whether we happen to be rich or poor, smart or dumb, or whatever it is that we can't control. That's what Hashem decides to give us. But he says that in terms of, you know, tzaddik v'rasha, that's totally up to us. Then he says, maybe he refers to the concept that we said before also, right? The idea of choosing of, you know, our ability of becoming either a rasha or a tzaddik. And also the pasuk says, vayichi adam. So he says, the Kliyakar writes that if you look at toward the end of the parashah, Torah gives all the years of all the different people, right? It says, first it lists how old they were when they had their that particular child. Then it says how many years when they had banim ubanos, and then it says their total years of life, right? So the Kliyuker says, how come it's broken up like that? So he says that first it lists the years before they had children, then the years after the children, then totally, and every time it says vayomos at the end, right? It always says right that they died. So it says that it does, and but if you look at in the parsha Noach, the Torah also has a listing of people and ages. It doesn't say vayomos there, but in parsha Noach, he says the reason is because when a person who doesn't have children is called mispachai, where he has no continuation to his progeny. So he says the rishoyim also who don't have any maisim tovim are also mispachai essentially. So he says all the people that were listed here, Adam, Shais, Enosh, these people were good people, they were tzaddikim. So he says these people all had inherently, they were already living in terms of their own actions even before they had children, and when they had children they were even living more, they had, you know, even more of a sense of life even beyond that point. But after the Mabul says then there was Misa, and then there was all these chesronos of the world other than Misa also that were existent. Now why does it say Vayamos? The Chiddush is that all of them died naturally and not from the Mabul, as opposed to in Parshas Noach. And of course after the Mabul the world changed, and all the years weren't equal anymore, not everyone lived as long anymore. Fine. And then, anyway, he said after the Mabul, it was obvious that people would die. And he also says that the chain of people that are mentioned here were on the Neviim. Because, first of all, who can say, you know, when the pasuk says when Noach was born, it says, Zeyenachaminu ma'aseinu mi'etzavoni adin. It says, how do we know that? So they were Neviim. And he says also the names Noach, Hanoch, Mesushalach, and Eber also demonstrate the idea, right, that they were Neviim as well. Then it says, Vayara Hashem ki rabara asa Adam. So the Kliyuker writes that since they sinned with Znus, and Znus is this great taiva, and it gets worse and worse, like the Gemara says, Moy Katan. Eber Katan ba'adam as bio rai. Right? So he says that the same is true when it comes to Gezel. A person who loves Gezel, plus it says in Kalas, oh, if Kesef, lo yis b'Kesef. You love money, you're never going to be satisfied, you're always going to want more. Well, lastly, in the parsha, the Kliyuker is commenting on the very seemingly controversial pasuk, "Vayinachem Hashem ki asa es adam ba'aretz vayisatzei ve'libo," which basically Hashem says, "I regret it." Emchas Hashem brings me up here, right? I regret having created man. So everyone asks, what does that mean? Hashem regretted anything? What does that mean? The Kliyuker, it's like a beautiful way to end off the parsha. It's very poetic. He says, many people try to explain how Hashem could, what does it mean? Hashem could regret. What does that? Everyone tries to give a vart. What does it mean that Hashem regrets anything? But he says, don't get so bogged down by this question. He says, it shouldn't wear down your seichel. He says, don't think about it. Why? Because the pasuk says, "Kilo machshavosay machshavoseichem v'lo darichem d'orei." We don't understand the ways of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He says, that's it. That's the end of the story. He says, we cannot begin to possibly fathom the ways HaKadosh Baruch Hu thinks. It's totally beyond anything that we can think of. So he says, who are we to think, oh, I understand the ways HaKadosh Baruch Hu works? Who are you? You don't understand the ways HaKadosh Baruch Hu works. The way he operates, what he calls regret, is not what we call regret. So, just because today was the Yahrzeit of the Chasam Sofer, I have to at least mention one thing from the Chasam Sofer. There's a beautiful idea the Chasam Sofer develops about a model of chinuch, about the ideal way to educate, you know, in terms of other people, in terms of Talmidim and other ways. He says there are three characters mentioned in the beginning of Sefer Bereishis that are paradigms, either positive or negative, for chinuch. There's Chanuch in this parsha, if Noach in this parsha, we have Avram in 2 weeks from now, right? So he says, what are the commonalities? Chanuch, the pasuk says, died at the age of 365, which is relatively young for that time. Why did he die? The pasuk says, Ve'inenu kilakacho so alokim, right? Rashi comments on the strange law shown that he was really a tzaddik, he was a big tzaddik, but he was easily influenced by external influences, and he would easily be seduced by other people. So Hashem said, I can't let you stay here because you're gonna become easily seduced. So Hashem took him away early. Noach was not exactly proactive, but when people came to ask him, what are you doing? I'm on the Ativa, the Mabul's coming, do tshuva, right? But he didn't go out there. Avram went out. Avram proactively was promoting, you know, monotheism. He went out. So the Chasam Sofer says like this. He says, when it comes to Chanuch, Chanuch was a mal. Chanuch just sat by himself, his bodhidus, learned, whatever he did. It's interesting, actually, the Rav Dessler quotes from Rav Sosalant, who was a medrash, that Chanuch was a shoemaker. And he actually talks about how Chanuch all day just sat and made shoes. That's all he did. He's a very focused shoemaker. And he talks this whole question about when you're osik and you're parnasa, you're allowed to think Torah. It's a machlokas about this, actually. Beis Halevi says maybe if it's a malacha, it won't detract from your malacha, you can think about Torah while you're working. But either way, so he says that Chanuch was, he sat in his corner, he did his thing. Noach was somewhere in the middle. Noach was like, he wasn't going out, he wasn't, you know, being the NCSYQ of rabbi exactly, but people came to him, he would tell them what the story was. But he says, the ideal model of chinuch is like Avram. He says, but he takes it a step further. He says, Avram went out, even at the expense of his own Yiddish, his own Avodas Hashem, his own Torah, his own whatever. Avram said, it's more important for me to be the leader and the face of Am Yisrael, or the beginning of the Jewish people, even at the expense of my own personal growth. Yitzchak was almost the exact opposite. Even though we know that the Brisker Rav, I think, points out in many places that Yit, in his parish of Chumash, the Brisker Rav says that Yitzchak was literally just a Hemshech of Avram. Everything Yitzchak does, he redigs the same wells. Yitzchak is like the same thing, but he's so different than Avram. Yitzchak's personality is so different. Yitzchak is Yira, he's Gvura. Yitzchak is like, he was on the Akedah, he couldn't leave Eretz Yisrael, he was very constricted. Yitzchak never left anywhere, he was a scary figure. When Rivka saw it, she fell off the camel. Yitzchak was a very imposing person. Avram was very bubbly, Avram was very outgoing, Avram was like the Kiruv Rabbi. Avram was the one who everyone wanted him to be a part of, wanted to have a piece of him. He says, that's the ideal model of Chinuch, Chassid Sofer says, is that to be a person that you know, you can draw people in and that you can show people the beauty and, you know, what it is that they're missing, what it is that they have to be drawn to.